Good morning, everybody. My name is Mike Fella. I'm the member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Harish Palmin. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Naren Singh. I'm a member of parliament and the person promoting the private members' bill on behalf of the late Dr. Amrish.
Okay, good morning, everybody. My name is Fish Mahalila.
Good morning. I'm Chris Valentina. I'm from the University of Southern Boss, and I'm here on invitation for the chairperson.
Sorry, sir. We are still members of friends.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Please.
My name is Walmart James, and I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning,
everybody. My name is Nontan Chirindara. I'm the member of this committee.
All right. Our guests.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Torin Wynn. I represent the Amprosini Ford Foundation.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rava. I represent the Cancer Treatment Campaign, one of the consulting bodies on the Medical Innovation Bill.
Good morning, one of the members. My name is Cindy Le, from the National Department of Health.
Morning, honorable members. Azil Gandhi, South African Medical Research Council, Stakeholder Affairs.
My name is members. Makua, I'm from Minister of Health.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Andrew Pele from the National Department of Health.
My honourable members, Professor Tibuka from the Medical Research Council, Legal and Compliance Services.
Good morning, honourable members. Charles Perry, the Director of the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the Medical Research Council.
Good morning, honourable members. Ronwyn Myers from the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Jen Gray. I'm the President and CEO of the South African Medical Research Council.
We have got guests that are from here.
Good morning, honourable members. Anthony Rees from the Traditional and Mental Health Alliance.
Good morning, honourable members. Eric Anthony Mitchell, Chief of Staff and Kind of Freedom Party.
Michael Prince, Parliamentary Legal Services.
Good morning, I'm Charlie Singh from CMG.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Catherine Tomlinson, the Doctor of Staff Orders.
Mr. Davison, you want to see your food and Davison?
Apologies, I'm Tajin Kumar from CMG.
Thank you very much, honourable members and our guests. You will then have noticed that the composition of our guests is precisely because we said we invite people that will then make presentations and the research, the people that have got the expertise who are then going to take us through, because that is where we are in terms of today's interactions and in the brief, in as far as the agenda is concerned. We are joined, I can see the other gentleman from the media, I'm not quite sure which other lady is, she can indicate using the mic, so that we're able to know. Yes. you are trying to get the seats, can you please introduce yourself and yourself also, the two of you that is just coming? Can you use the mic and introduce yourself?
This is Professor Atemani from Chicago Mahatu, Los Angeles University.
On my extreme left, there against the wall is Moses, who is part of the control of the committee administration, who is also in the research unit. We are going to get a presentation from the advocate Bosmati. He's one in the in my friend, that's what he said. I think that's how it is going to be set up. So we will hand over to you, and so that you take us through. And yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, also the Honorable Members, for affording MRP an opportunity to share insights on the bill. I have a bit of flu, so I might not be coming out very clearly, so just my apologies for that. I am Advocate Osuna Chibuka. So I'll be talking to the first part of the MRC's presentation, which is the legal consideration. Honorable Chair and the members, we have prepared a more fully reasoned document for the consideration of the House, and also discuss close gaps to what I was talking to in my slides. The slides are really an attempt to try and be economic with time in terms of shortening what is in the content of the more fully reasoned document. So we started by looking at basically why should the MRC express opinion or share insights on the bill. So if one has regard to the MRC as an entity established in terms of an act of parliament, if one considers section 3 and 4 of the SAMRC Act, they set out the objectives and the functions of the MRC. So by virtue of those sessions, the MRC is basically or effectively a public custodian of health or medical research in South African context. And it is for that reason that we felt it was properly conceived for the MRC to share insights on the bill. So we looked at a number of things from a legal point of view. We first looked at the objectives of the bill and considered them against certain legal principles. So the first thing that we considered was what is the position currently in law in South Africa with respect to cannabis or cannabinoids or derivatives thereof. It was clear when we looked at various parts of the law applicable to this subject that the law is almost certain or settled currently in that cannabinoids or cannabis is an unlawful substance. We will talk to that as we go through the slides in terms of reference to specific laws that deal with the subject matter. And also Professor Perry will address some of the issues that we feel that from a content point of view, would need to be investigated and addressed further before a more firm position is adopted on the bill. We looked at the definitions section of the bill, and more interestingly, we considered the phrase or the definition of treatment in the bill. Without reading the fuller definition in the bill, but we are more interested in certain of the aspects listed there in terms of what treatment would be, and we're more interested in the concept of curing. We examined various instruments, and we realized that from a definition's point of view, and to avoid having situations of difficulty with enforcement, the definition of treatment, especially in as far as it includes curing, may need some refinement. Our view is that in legal terms, curing is a more definitive concept. So if an assertion is made to suggest that the cannabis or cannabinoids will, among other things, cure the particular ailments, it needs to be a firm medical decision. So we felt that to that extent, the definition of treatment would need to be refined further. We also have regard to the proposed concept of pilot health centers. We have no specific objection or we don't foresee adverse impacting establishing the health center, the pilot health center. But we do think that we may want to share with the portfolio committee is that in the consideration of the establishment of those health centers, there needs to be some further thinking in the governance of those. One of the things we are proposing is that if one has regard to the National Health Act in terms of what it sets as standards and requirements for purposes of health research, we feel that it may assist if the bill were to provide for the consultation with the Medical Research Council, the Office of Health Standards Compliance, in as far as it oversees health facilities or establishments, as well as the National Ethics and Research Council. So we felt that in the process whereby the minister may designate certain facilities as pilot health centers, it would be helpful for the minister to consult with the bodies that we've listed there. We also felt that it may assist if those bodies or one of them has an oversight role over the pilot health centers. So we looked at issues of governance. As I have previously referred to the National Health Act, Section 11 of the National Health Act provides for certain governance processes for purposes of health research conducted at health establishments or facilities. So we thought that there may be a need to provide in the bill more extensively on the governance of the health centers. We also considered that there may be some other governance instruments that would need, that the people need to be aligned. We specifically thought that the informed consent provided for in terms of the National Health Act will have to feature in the bill to the extent that the particular patients who may want to utilize this intervention will have to, especially because it would be in the form of pilot or testing or research, it would be important for those patients to be protected by way of having to consent to that, to such treatment. We also had consideration of the POPI Act, the Promotion of Personal Information Act, which prescribes or set out requirements for purposes of gathering, usage, and disposition of personal information of people. So we felt that the understand that the relevant patients, because this is not going to be an open-ended intervention, but used in specific circumstances under specific considerations, it would be useful to align the deal with the POPI Act for purposes of information of the persons. And obviously, the Consumer Protection Act as well, we felt that there may be a need to, there would be a need to align the governance requirements in the deal with the Consumer Protection Act. We also, in examining the bill, foresaw a potential constitutional challenge with respect to the medical practitioner. You will recall that the bill proposes to prescribe that the persons who can administer or dispense or prescribe or treat using cannabis or cannabinoids would be medical practitioner in the manner defined in the Health Professions Act. Now, what we call a potential or possible constitutional challenge is with respect to other health professions. In particular, we consider, for example, professions falling under the Allied Health Professions Council. We were advised that some of those professions do consider certain of the ingredients or components of cannabis or cannabinoids as useful interventions in their scope of practice. Now, we felt that given that the law recognizes those professions and probably the non-use of cannabis or cannabinoids in their scope of practice is limited by the current general law, which specifically makes it illegal to use it. So if the window in this form of the bill is open for cannabinoids to be legalized, those professions might put a case forward to say, but we also are recognized health professionals. We've got a scope of practice recognized by law, and this particular plant or intervention, it is also something that is in our scope, but for the illegality of it. So we felt that there may be a need to consider taking, at the very least, a constitutional certification, if you like, from the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor to say, to advise whether or not there may be strong prospects if such challenge were to be mounted. And obviously, if there is a reasonable prospect in such challenge, then the House would have to consider to refine further the definition of a medical practitioner. I've already highlighted that in South African law, the cannabinoids or cannabis use of is illegal. So in respect of that, there are certain, we call it controversial amendments. There are certain laws who currently makes it illegal for cannabis or cannabinoids to be utilized for various reasons. So those laws will have to be amended by way of consequential amendments in order to be aligned to the purposes of the bill, so that you do not have conflicting laws and you have battles with enforcement at a later stage. We just want also, which is something we think that the Honorable House is probably acutely aware of, that South Africa is a signatory to the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs of 1961, which is the international instrument that sets the restrictions, or probably in certain instances, the prohibition on the usage of cannabis. So we felt that to the extent that the proposed bill may vary South Africa's commitment in terms of that international instrument, the committee will have to consider how far it may, in terms of its commitment to that international instrument, how far it may change its position currently. So basically, our case is that in law there is certainty, and it is a settled law that cannabis is at this point in time an unlawful substance. We feel that it may not be as settled in the medical or professional practice, and the certainty needs to be achieved in that space by way of various investigations, and that certainty will then assist the legal instrument, because one thing you don't want to have is to have a legal instrument that is very difficult to administer or to enforce because the practicalities on the ground do not talk to the instrument. I thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Advocate. We are now going to hand over, more or less, members. I just want to check, are there any challenges in terms of the legal part, or should we also then get a representation and then combine all the questions? Can I check with them? By nodding the same file, let's continue. We will now hand over to Professor Charles Perry, take us to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to give the health or medical viewpoint from the Medical Research Council, covering five aspects in my presentation. First, I'll give some background, then talk very briefly about what is medical cannabis. Thirdly, the legality of medical use of cannabis. Fourthly, should we consider the use of cannabis for medical purposes, focusing on the criteria that are used for any other medication, effectiveness, safety, cost-effectiveness of medical cannabis, supply and regulation, the route of administration, and then end up with two slides which really conclude the MRC's viewpoints on this matter. So I've got 23 slides to go through, and I'll stick with the points that I've put in the slides quite carefully because we thought about the wording. So who am I? I've already said I'm the director of the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the MRC, where I've been employed since 2001. I'm a registered clinical and research psychologist with the Health Profession Council. And in June 2014, my colleague Professor Bronwyn Myers and I wrote an article in the South African Medical Journal on the topic of medical cannabis. You can see a little picture it on the right-hand side there. And we've updated slightly our position on that, but it's very much what was written in that original article, which we worked on following the the bill being presented to Parliament. My first exposure to medical cannabis, in fact, was in 2000 when I met Dr. Raphael Mitchellum in Hanover, Germany, where we were both giving a presentation at the Millennium Meets Medicine Meets Millennium Conference in Hanover, Germany. And we had a chance to talk as presenters, and he was the Israeli scientist who isolated Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, which I'll refer to later on, which is the main psychoactive constituent of cannabis plant in its pure form. He spoke to me at that time about the benefits of cannabinoids inducing brain swelling in trauma patients, and that sort of got me thinking a bit about the medical use of a drug which we tend to see only as an illegal substance. As you all know, honorable members, on 19th of February last year, the IFP MP Mario Ariani of Ambrosini made an impassioned plea to President Zuma and Parliament to legalize the medical use of cannabis. And he informed Parliament of his intention to introduce a private members bill, which is called the Medical Innovation Bill, to move that agenda forward. And President Zuma, in response, indicated that he'd asked the Minister of Health to look into the matter. So let's look at the purposes of the bill, and there were five purposes that are set out. We need to remind ourselves what they are. Firstly, to codify existing best practices as to decisions by medical practitioners to innovate in cases where evidence-based treatment or management is not optimal or appropriate because the available evidence is insufficient or uncertain. And certainly as Medical Research Council, we are interested in evidence. That's our business, part of our business. Secondly, the purpose of the bill is to enhance certainty and clarity for medical practitioners and others regarding the criteria to be applied in determining whether to innovate in the cases referred to in subsection 1. Thirdly, to encourage responsible innovation in medical treatment and management by supporting reasonable and logical clinical decisions. And I think it's opening up the whole area of innovation, which could go far beyond what's in the existing bill. Fourthly, and we support this, to deter reckless, illogical, and unreasonable departure from standard practice. And fifthly, to legalize and regulate the use of cannabinoids for medical purposes and for beneficial commercial and industrial uses. And I'll refer to that, the part I've underlined later as well. So the bill certainly, as I've indicated there, seeks to do more than just promote medical innovation. It has a subsidiary aim of promoting legalization in general. And I think that part is problematic. It should really seek to do one or the other, and it complicates things by having them in the same legislation, because they are really very separate issues. Even if cannabis was legal, it would not mean we should be using it as a medicine. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't look into that or move forward on that agenda. I'm just saying there are two separate issues. On a positive note, it does seek to facilitate more medical research on medical cannabis, and we certainly strongly support that as a Medical Research Council. But it only seeks to promote a limited type of research, medical treatment for patients suffering from various conditions, rather than for promoting a much broader array of research. And we think there's an opportunity here that should be opened up, looking beyond just the narrow issue of treatment for certain patients. So what is medical cannabis? It refers to the use of cannabis and constituent cannabinoids, including THC and cannabidiol, CBD, as therapy to treat or alleviate symptoms of medical conditions. And the previous speaker made some reference to the differences between alleviating symptoms and treatment or cure, and I'll be coming back to that as well. In some countries, synthetic cannabinoids, such as nabilone, the trade name is Sevmet, or dronabinol, marinol, and I've put two pictures of what the containers containing those medications look like, are available for these purposes. Cannabinoids are delivered through various mechanisms, the most obvious being through smoking. However, smoking cannabis can be hazardous to health due to the toxic compounds created in the combustion process. And one even sees reference to this if you go onto websites which are promoting cannabis use They will talk about, for example, using vaporizers in order to get more pure form of cannabis. You don't have to smoke as much and you don't get some of the contaminants. So I think it's fairly widespread known that smoking cannabis can be hazardous to health. Furthermore, if you smoke a product, it's very difficult to regulate the amount of cannabinoids being ingested, the dosage. It's a very different kind of delivery mechanism to many other medications. However, users report that smoking is a very fast-acting delivery mechanism. Cannabinoids can also be ingested orally through the use of vaporizers or used transdermally through patches, and you'll see a patch there on someone's ankle, just above the ankle, and by suppositories, and a picture of suppositories at the top. Synthetic cannabis is most often delivered in pill form. The delivery mechanisms vary in cost and ease of access, and in South Africa, certainly smoking is the cheapest delivery mechanism for cannabis. It's the most easily accessible delivery mechanism, as cannabis is widely available to purchase, although you might risk arrest. Cannabis oil is also available on the black market, and you can find recipes on the internet for people seeking to make their own. And it doesn't sound very complicated, even for someone like myself, who's not a very good cook. The medical use of cannabis is now legal in Austria, Canada, Finland, Germany, Israel, Italy, Netherlands, Portugal, Spain. And the United States, medical use of cannabis in 20 states, plus the District of Columbia, are not prosecuted, so long as they are in compliance with states' marijuana sale regulations. For example, in some states, they need a prescription. However, in South Africa, it's currently illegal to possess cannabis or to trade in it. We have no medicines approved by the Medicines Control Council that contain THC, other cannabinoids, or even synthetic cannabinoids. Cannabis has also not been approved for medical use by the U.S. Federal Drug Administration, and there are three reasons for this. Firstly, the FDA believes there's a lack of human clinical trials showing the benefits outweigh the risks. Secondly, they refer to inconsistencies in the main chemical compound, especially when smoked. And thirdly, they refer to negative health effects sometimes associated with cannabis use, especially when smoked. And I went on the website yesterday, and this is for the standing position of the FDA. So should we consider the use of cannabis for medical purposes in South Africa? The use of cannabis for medical or other purposes was prohibited in South Africa more than 60 years ago, at a time when scientific knowledge about it was scarce. It's now clear that cannabis has medical utility. We put that on the record. But this has largely been overlooked, with research and society's attention being directed to the hazards of recreational use rather than to the medical benefits. Certainly in South Africa, that's been the overwhelming situation. Consideration of policy for medical cannabis should, as I've said before, be kept separate from consideration about recreational cannabis, except insofar as increased medical cannabis might increase recreational use, and I will refer to evidence for or against that. The critical question for approval of any medicine are evidence of effectiveness, does it work? Safety, is it safe to use? Thirdly, cost effectiveness, probably supply, how are you going to reduce it? Supply regulation, sorry. And the route of administration, how you ingest it. And I'm going to go through each of those in turn because cannabis deserves the respect of being looked at in terms of, you know, whether it, how it meets each of these criteria. Firstly, effectiveness. And most of the data here has focused on symptom management rather than on curing conditions, rather than on treatment. And evidence is mixed. Mr. Ariani Ambrosini referred to studies from Harvard, a respected university, cited in the cannabis position paper, which was presented to the Central Drug Authority in November 2013, and I put a snapshot of the front page of that report, which you may have seen. This report highlights various studies, mainly preclinical, which refers, I've said there with the asterisk, to research done in test tubes, looking at effects of cannabis on cell cultures, and animal studies, but some involving human subjects that showed positive effects on a variety of conditions, Alzheimer's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, chronic pain, multiple sclerosis, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, incontinence, gastrointestinal disorders, and various cancers, including lung cancer. And that's certainly quite an impressive list of conditions where the paper refers to having some positive effects. And if you go to the Mayo Clinic's website, which I did yesterday to check that it was still there, what it said about this, it lists various conditions and the evidence of cannabis in terms of addressing those conditions. And it ranks them from A to like F, where A is like excellent, almost incontrovertible evidence in support of, B is good evidence, and C, it gets worse. And for treatment of chronic pain and multiple sclerosis, the Mayo Clinic says there is good evidence in support of cannabis having some positive effects. So certainly it's something we cannot wish away or dismiss, and we have to look at very seriously. Continuing to look at the effectiveness, does it work? Cannabinoids are often used for symptom management, palliative care in cancer. And with regard to pain relief in cancer patients, in experimental models of acute pain, inhaled cannabis resulted in dose-dependent pain relief. In patients with chronic pain, both cannabis and cannabinoids outperformed placebo treatment, which is sort of just giving them a fake medication. However, few studies have compared cannabis or cannabinoids with conventional medications. And this research was conducted in 2008, and I think the field has moved slightly forward in the 7 years since then. With regard to the effects of cannabis or cannabis extracts on AIDS wasting syndrome, certainly something which is hugely important in South Africa, a Cochrane review, which included authors from the Medical Research Council, found that 7 studies included in the review suffered from bias and small sample size. That is, all 7 studies. That's all they could find. And they lacked longitudinal data, limiting the extent to which conclusions could be drawn. What this means is that they're saying the evidence is not strong enough right now to say that it's really effective, but that doesn't mean that it's not effective. That more research was in the conclusion that we really need longer studies with bigger sample sizes, and we may well find that it plays a very useful role. Evidence is stronger with regard to the positive effects of cannabinoids in treating chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting in cancer patients, which is a huge burden that patients on cancer treatment experience, having nausea and vomiting. And human studies suggest the efficacy of cannabinoids in the management of chemically-induced nausea and vomiting. But they do say, and this is a 2014 published article, that further research aims at developing new endocannabinoid-based anti-nausea and anti-emetic therapies is still warranted. So they say, yes, there's something there, but they recommend further research. As I said, Professor Meyers and I wrote a paper, which was published in the Scientific Medical Journal last year. And since writing that paper, I spoke to colleagues internationally about what's being discussed in South Africa. And one of them in Australia pointed me to a German review published in 2014, where the front page is published on the right-hand side there, which found 84 favorable and only 9 unfavorable controlled studies assessing the potential for cannabis or cannabinoids for addressing half a dozen conditions. Certainly, that's a lot of studies, but most of them in favor. So if you look at this paper, they looked at 4 conditions. Spasticity, secondly nausea and vomiting due to psychosis, cancer drugs, loss of appetite and weight loss, and chronic pain. You've got to go to medical school for about 8 years to learn how to pronounce these complicated conditions. And I spent more than 8 years in school, but not in medical school. So certainly what they found was, if you look at the studies there, and they looked at the different drugs, most of them are synthetic or cannabinoid, synthetic, and they found overwhelmingly positive studies. So certainly that made me look at a new look at the data. But when we were looking through this paper more carefully, We did have concerns about the study, and certainly my colleagues in Australia were saying, you know, the evidence is really there. Your country needs to move forward on this issue. Why aren't you moving forward? Well, we've looked at that paper in more depth, and we found a possible vested interest in showing the positive effects in this paper. The two authors consult for the pharmaceutical industry, and they have other links to cannabis-related associations. Secondly, they didn't undertake what we call a meta-analysis, where you pool the data across the studies and you look to see the strength of association, taking into account the strengths of the methods of the studies, which ones are showing a positive effect and which ones aren't. So that's a huge problem with this paper before we can really say, yes, this is a definitive paper which should guide the South African government on this issue. But it should take it into consideration. We have no idea if there's actually a positive effect taking all these studies into account, how homogenous the findings are, because they don't undertake this meta-study. They undertook no consideration of the quality of the studies. Perhaps the studies showing the positive effects were really well done and those showing negative weren't, or the other way around. And we have no data from their paper to really evaluate the quality of the research. And certainly, South Africa, we cannot make decisions based on, we should be making decisions based on imperfect data. It's not a systematic review, but rather a selective literature review. We have no idea of the studies that were excluded or why. For example, they ignored two Cochrane reviews on this topic. There aren't very many Cochrane reviews, only about three or four. But the two most important or relevant ones were the one on AIDS waiting syndrome, which I referred to, and they ignored that, and another study looking at the effects of cannabis on multiple sclerosis, which also found that the evidence was not strong enough to show a positive effect. They didn't show there wasn't an effect, but they seem to have ignored these studies, and I'm not sure why they weren't included in this review. There is very exciting emerging evidence that cannabinoids may have anti-cancer effects, particularly anti-tumor effects, shrinking tumors. This is really very exciting for people working in the cancer field. And here we're looking beyond palliation at therapeutic effects. These are mainly preclinical studies, and few human trials have been published in this area. More trials are required to achieve certainty that cannabis or cannabinoids can be used as anti-cancer agents. Moving on to slide 16 of 23, so you know where we are. Looking at the safety of medical cannabis, how safe is it to use? Our own research, in fact, some of it's conducted by my own research, has shown associations between cannabis use and road trafficking injuries and other forms of trauma. We found links to cannabis and crime, especially property crimes, murder crimes, and that was something I was involved in the early 2000s. And looking at cannabis use and sexual HIV risk behaviors. But we need to be honest here, the research doesn't show a strong causal mechanism. It shows an association. Furthermore, unpublished research conducted at the SAMRT Stress and Anxiety Research Unit at Stellenbosch University using functional magnetic resonance imaging found cognitive deficits associated with cannabis use in young adolescents, I think they were males, young adults in the early 20s, even after participants stopped using cannabis for several weeks. A recent review conducted by Wen Hall and Louisa Degenhardt in The Lancet, again shown on the right-hand side there in 2009, identified several adverse effects associated with cannabis use. A dependence syndrome, increased risk of motor vehicle crashes, impaired respiratory function, cardiovascular disease, adverse effects of regular use on adolescent psychosocial development, and mental health. However, and then you need to understand the other, these harms should not be overstated and they don't affect all users. And secondly, at community level, harms associated with cannabis use are less than those associated with alcohol or tobacco. And that's work in The Lancet, published in 2011 and 12 by Professor David Nutt, with two keys. Thirdly, again looking at the safety of medical cannabis, we have to look at studies of the side effects of medical cannabis, not studies of the side effects of recreational cannabis use. And reviews of medical cannabis used under essential control conditions indicate that frequencies of both side effects and dependence are low when you're looking at the use of medical cannabis with use of treatment. We need to compare the side effects of cannabis versus symptoms if there's no treatment versus the side effects of conventional medications. Doctors and pharmacists will require further education about medical cannabis and how to instruct patients in its use, and criteria for patient selections will need development if we go ahead with medical cannabis in South Africa. Fourthly, fourth slide on this, as with opioid analgesics, such as morphine or products containing codeine, the risk of diversion of medical cannabis must be minimized. But it's hard to envision how significant diversion will be necessary when cannabis is very easy to obtain in South Africa anyway. In US states that have passed medical cannabis laws, no increase was found in the prevalence of use overall or among adolescents. That's a publication from 2013. In general, medical cannabis policies reduce cannabis consumption in the general population. But states that allow dispensaries or allow home cultivation can completely offset positive effects on cannabis consumption in the wider community. So the point being made here is if medical cannabis is made available in South Africa, where it's dispensed, how it's produced, so on, has to be controlled very, very carefully. Otherwise, you're going to get that spill-out into the broader population. In the United States, legalization was associated very interestingly with 8 to 11% drop in traffic fatalities. Perhaps people were now smoking cannabis instead of alcohol and not being interested in going out onto the road because they were so thrilled. We need to separate out the health effects of synthetic cannabis versus cannabis on its own, you know, smoking cannabis versus the synthetic version, and also whether it's smoked or taken up in other ways. So they ask, it's not a simple situation of do we compare smoking cannabis with not. You have to look at the various parameters. Thirdly, the cost effectiveness of medical cannabis. There's no data I've seen yet on whether it's cost effective, but it's likely to be very cost effective. However, I was also researching this yesterday. Vaporizers are not cheap, and that's the preferred method of inhalation. You can get even something like a pen, and they cost about $100 for a kit which contains the pen and all the other apparatuses. But maybe $100 is not that expensive if you consider many other medications and you keep them for a long time. We need also to look at the issue of supply and regulation. We need to supply consistent, high-quality cannabis leaf. And you can't imagine how many people have been emailing me saying, if South Africa moves forward on this issue, how can they get in on this business? And I've kept them all. Do we import it from other countries in order not to increase production in South Africa? Should the Department of Health get into the business, Dr. Billet, on producing cannabis? Or should there be a license to South African companies to cultivate and produce in compliance with clear standards and be subject to strict quality control under the Department of Health? So that would probably be the preferred method if the decision to support medical cannabis goes ahead, particularly as you've heard that the colleague is not keen to get into the business of produce of growing cannabis. The route of administration, smoking, as I've said, is not an accurate dosage method, and I think many doctors do have concerns about medical cannabis. I've even spoken to doctors who support legalization of cannabis widely, but don't support medical cannabis, such as the ex-deputy head of the medical journal has that position. And it's not acceptable to many patients, nor is it, as I said, medically acceptable to some doctors. Oral absorption through pill form is somewhat poor, slow and unpredictable, and some patients feel it less acceptable, but I'm not sure how good that statement is. Vaporization in an electrically heated vaporizer produces comparable results and is now the preferred method of administration of medical cannabis. It's also, if you go onto the internet, a preferred means of ingestion of certain recreational uses as well. Conclusion, I have two slides here. What is the position of the Medical Research Council? Firstly, we do commend the late MP for bringing attention to the issue of medical cannabis. We don't support the bill in its current form. We argue that the issue of medical cannabis should be separated from legalization of cannabis or commercial cultivation. and the Public Health Research Organization, we do not support smoking of cannabis for recreational purposes, just as we don't support smoking of tobacco. Thirdly, we acknowledge increasing evidence of the value of medical cannabis using extracts such as oils, tablets, patches, and vaporizers in providing palliative care for various conditions. And that's quite a progressive statement, I believe, for the MRC to be making. But we have a but we recommend a Cochrane review to be undertaken by the SAMRC to evaluate the quality and strength of the evidence for use of cannabinoids, cannabis, for both palliative care and therapeutic use. This would take possibly, it could be done in a year. And we believe that the Medicines Control Council needs to consider the evidence before registering cannabinoids in South Africa. And we believe it should come before the Medicines Control Council in the medium term. This is not something that we believe should be delayed forever. And South Africa needs to consider it and shouldn't just write this off straight away. Sixth, we believe the Medical Research Council should take a further role in coordinating further research and clinical trials on the use of medical cannabis broadly, looking at innovative aspect here, looking at use of medical cannabis for palliative care and for treatment. And finally, we believe the MRC should also monitor the possible influences of medical cannabis use on non-medical use of cannabis, especially amongst adolescents. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor. We are going to take a short break, and then after that we'll then take questions from members, and how you will then respond, it will depend on your time to just give you some, if members are fine with that, whether we take questions now, allow them to rearrange and on how they are going to respond. Can I just get which is the best route? Listen to, they take all the questions, they pray for tea, they arrange and who is going to respond on what. Remember that we've got two presentations, the legal part of it and then the actual subject.
May I suggest, Honourable Chair, that we, as you say, just ask our questions now, then back around the chief to prepare.
Okay. Over to you, Honourable Members. We have been joined by two or three persons. Before questions, I would like to first the ground rules. Guests don't ask questions, don't use their phones. And if the two gentlemen or three that have joined us are guests, but they'll also introduce themselves so that we are aware who is here from the Medical Research Council. And
good morning, everyone. My name is Niresh Bhagwandin, Executive Manager of Strategic Research Initiatives of the South African Medical Research Council.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Lord Schneider. I'm an addictionologist working in the field of addiction medicine and rehabilitation in South Africa for the last 24 years. I'm also the immediate past president of the International Narcotics Control Board of the United Nations, and I'm also the director of Dubo Foundation, which is a non-profit. Thank you.
I'm not from the MSC. I'm from Times Media Group. I'm a journalist here in Parliament. My name is Mabalo. Thank you. Mabalo Tense.
There's a lady at back. Can you please use the mic to introduce yourself? Ma'am, please.
Morning, Chair. Morning, members. I'm Gay Davis with Eyewitness News.
Thank you. Honourable members, I can see hands. Honourable James, Honourable Volnick, Honourable Singh, Honourable Maisel, Honourable Ndaba, nobody in that order. And
Thank you very much, and thank you for a very capable presentation. I can comment and then just one question. The comments are that you are quite right to draw a strict line of separation between the use of marijuana for medical purposes and for the operation of legalization for general use. I think that's a really important distinction. And although my party is not taking a decision on this yet, we'd be much more comfortable with the first part, not the second part. The first comment. The second comment is that if it's for medical use, then you clearly need to have a governance structure around production and a supply of high-quality leaf. And the key there is that there has to be a robustness in how that regulates it. And who regulates it and who controls it, one must be satisfied that there are test systems for doing that. In our current environment, that is a very important question to ask. The third is that although there seems to be some evidence of successful medical use of marijuana, it's not a cure for cancer, and it cannot be a cure for cancer because we haven't solved the science problem for what causes cancer. And without going into a long lecture about it, we know that cancer is a consequence of unregulated cell duplication that is triggered by genetic malfunction that can be a result of chemical interference and is also inherited. So the cells will know when to stop when you get a tumor. And why that happens is not entirely clear. So it's what scientists call, as you know, an intractable problem. It's not that science cannot solve it at this stage, although it's not some forms of viral cancer. And the reason why I ask a question is that that second part is something that the science community and medical community of South Africa has focused on as well. Because the science is a global enterprise, so there's far more advances done in the north on the cancer problem. And one doesn't want to be parochial and nationalistic about it. But there's a contribution South African science can make in this area, and our country has to invest in it. So support for this particular bill, in whatever form, must be accompanied by another enterprise, which is to make sure that this is expensive, as you know, that the Medical Research Council costs a lot of money to do this kind of research, is that there has to be investment in finding a cure for those kinds of cancers that South Africans are prone to. And so those are my comments, more than questions. I did have one little question about the point you're making about these slides are not numbered, but it's point about cannabis not being approved for medical use by the FDA, and where you say that there are inconsistencies in the main chemical compound, especially in smoke. I'm not sure what you mean by that. Are you saying instability in the chemical compounds or inconsistencies? What exactly is the problem? Because the US FDA is pretty strict in terms of what it registers, and therefore, if there's a problem around inconsistencies, that's one issue. If it's instability in the chemical compound, is another issue. If you can just explain that to me.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for those presentations. Just three very quick questions. The advocate Bulka spoke about the fact that cannabis is legal as a certainty in our current in the kinds of legal framework. However, if memory serves me correct, I think it was the Department of Health that spoke to this committee about the fact that there is, in fact, a dispensation under very specific conditions for medical practitioners to prescribe cannabinoids. And if that already exists, it then speaks to one of the stated purposes of the law, which is the regulation of cannabis. Maybe a review of the current regulations would suffice to cover that point, the first part of that thing, as opposed to a new law. So that's the first question, if you can get clarity on that. The second question is, how What is the risk of substance dependence on cannabis users as compared to nicotine-containing substances like cigarette users and people consuming alcohol? In other words, is there a high risk of substance dependence? And then the third question is a motivational syndrome as associated with cannabis use. We know that there have been studies on pro-scastic performance, for example. But how prevalent is that amongst cannabis users? Because if it is, how it has an impact not just on the individual in terms of their progression, but also unemployment and economic impact, etc., etc. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Jefferson. Good morning, everybody. And Jefferson, firstly, may I thank you and the committee for bringing together such a high-profile group of medical people and legal people to talk about this. And, you know, I've realized and in the last few months that cannabis is really not a swear word, because normally it's a swear word. But now, from what you have been presenting to us, it's certainly not a swear word. And I thank the advocate and the professor for the presentation. But just to pick up on the point that your honorable colleague picked up as a point of departure, from research we have done, from opinion we have received, we believe that the Section 21, as is contained in the Act of 1965, would not allow, although you can prescribe, it would not allow the use of cannabis for any other, for treatment. And maybe you can give us your opinion on that. I've got a position paper on that particular aspect, which we'll discuss at another time. Chairperson, I don't think it is for now. What I'd like to know, Honorable Advocate, if we had to go medical research using cannabis, with all the checks and balances that Professor James has mentioned, and regulations, strict regulations, would the current legal precepts that we have in the country allow for that to happen? Is there legislation? Because you said it's illegal. Possession and use is illegal. So would current legislation allow that? That's my first question. And then we agree that there's a very, very important distinction which you've highlighted between the use for recreational use, religious use, industrial use, and medical use. And we also accept that there isn't a cure for cancer, although maybe since the MRC people are here, you could tell us whether the chairperson or you, whether you are doing any research in that regard. Because I think that's the first prize, to look for a cure for cancer, because millions of people are dying of cancer in our country. So I'll just, and then the last one is, from your view and opinion, I mean, plants, whether it's cannabis or any other plants, to what extent are plants used in the manufacture of medicines in our country and then around the world? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's very important to emphasize that we should separate the commercialization of the alcohol or marijuana or cannabis and the medical use from the beginning. We can't legislate for commercialization. It's not in our sphere of our competence. So that is a no-go matter from the start. That is done and buried. And for the medical use of cannabinoids, it is very important to realize that we can't legislate on the strength of anecdotal evidence and not empirical research evidence. That should be done even before we can bring the bill back to consider it on the strength of research that can prove empirically, not just anecdotal data, well, this and that. That is not what we are here. I mean, all scientific minds that are concentrated in this room would like to consider empirical evidence, not anecdotal evidence, and waste their time arguing on that. So let's go back and do research and come back with evidence that are not researched on a text, on a desktop, but that is done and that can be validated and defended. And there is a coherent view that must be
actually pursued and done, and so that we can actually compare with quite others. But the important thing is for our own scientists here to do research and come back with evidence that can be defended and that can be also be aligned with the international best standard. And so there is no prescription of use of cannabinoids, as far as I know. You apply case by case, and that is not prescribed, so it's not as illegal, and people want to make it to be. If you apply, and your application is it's not going to be rejected, and I've never heard of any application being rejected. So this has been used, case by case application. But if you just say anybody can possess and use, and you feel that you may be having cancer in the back, you better smoke that. And we don't want to use a Trojan horse type of thing where we open the sluice gates and the horse comes in, and you can't close the door once it's bolted. So let us use our scientific minds to come up with scientific answers to this question. Thank you.
Thanks, Professor. I think I still believe that data cannot show cancer. Whether you say cannabis or whatever, that is data. It cannot cure cancer. But I think I agree in terms of pain management. Because obviously, any substance that you use, you know, it makes you like a down of some sort. So you can't feel pain. Share with the experience that I have of people that are smoking Dhaka. I don't think there's any stage where I will agree that we can legislate such a bill. Because if the professor can just do us a favor, take people who've been smoking Dhaka Chepetan. You know, in our language, there's something that grows under the feet of those people. And we call it impesa. I don't know in English, but we call it impesa. So that on its own, it tells you that insango has an impact, a hazardous health effect to a human body. I'm not convinced of it. But in terms of pain management, and also, you know, it confuses. You know, if this bill was talking of medicine only, I'm sure I was going to think, you know, especially as of some of the things that the professor has presented in terms of the experience from other countries. But the mere fact that it wants to commercialize and industrialize in Dhaka, Chepetan, I cannot agree on that one. You know, Chepetan, there are many people who are smoking it. And the smoking is illegal, and they know what happens after they have smoked Dhaka. Thank
you. Michelle. No,
No, no, no, thanks. I'll just quickly first welcome the input and the presentations that has been made. Well, I'll go to the recommendations. I just want to get the clarity. If, because you say you agree on the process that has been initiated, but you are not supporting the deal in its current form, and the argument about the current form is the inclusion of the commercialization. So does that mean that if we remove or delete or take away the commercialization and industrialization process, will you support the thing? That's one. And if it's not used for smoking purposes, will you support it if regulations is put in such a way that whoever prescribes it is not prescribed in terms of using for smoking. And we then said, no, it's fine. The bill can proceed. And then the issue that the Honorable Balmik raised, which the matter of the department presented in MRC, you know, SEC, in the committee before you, the argument was that the issue that Honorable Balmik raised, that the current legislation and regulation does provide for the legalization, for the usage of cannabis. And in their view, it is sufficient because medical professionals can prescribe. And the accounting office, which is the DC, has the authority to approve the usage. And therefore, once approved, and anybody can acquire it and use it according to how it has been prescribed by the medical profession. Any of you, do you think that is insufficient? And if you think that is insufficient, you think this one addresses that particular matter? Or what are the weaknesses and the gap in the current legislation? So that we understand whether we need to improve that current legislation in the raw witnesses and to it, there are gaps that we feel need to be closed, or we need completely a new legislation altogether. And lastly, on the research, there is a view that we need to establish some centers for research, and we are there as a medical research council. What is your position on that? We have not said anything. Well, the legal person did say something. But from you as a clinical representative, what is your view about the bill proposing that there must be some research, one or two centers that will be dedicated for research vis-a-vis your existence? And what's your view on that particular matter, so that we understand whether we need additional, because maybe you don't have the necessary capacity as the medical research council, then you will need the capacity to be built up through this process, or there's other process that we can do to make sure that you build capacity yourself so that you're able to undertake this research and make sure that by the time you arrive at what under my realization, you've been able to produce some clinical evidence that will then assist us to take a particular position on this matter. Thanks.
Thank you very much, honorable members. My side is only unfortunately your presentation is not normal and it's difficult. It's quite an effort to really point into what one wants to speak to, but I'll just be referring to pain management. I would have appreciated that as the Medical Research Council, you would have come with an evidence of drugs that are being used as we speak in terms of pain management. Morphine, pathogen, how much cannabis is, if there is the amount in the, so that we are engaged on information that is. So I would have appreciated if you would have done that. That is my either a comment or a question, but that's what I wanted to reflect on. Or some of the issues that have been referred on, Honorable Volmik and Honorable Mashalela have asked, that's what was also in my mind, that in fact we're talking about something that is being done. There's a prescription, but a person must follow a particular process in this country. The issue of it being commercialized, I think it's not for us. There is a committee that deals with trade, which is trade and industry,
But I think you have heard what members use are saying in terms of, because we've got different experiences, if I can just indulge, different experiences on people that are smoking dacha. We have experiences, we have left them, we have laid them out, we have cancelled families. So it's quite a very sensitive, traumatic, and emotive subject, the issue of, if I can use Honorable Ndaba's term, because that's how we used to term it, for us, it's dacha. Whether you use this medical sophisticated word, but for us, as what in the community is being known. So if you can just clarify some of those issues that we have raised, which we think that when dealing with this, we can't paper over them. We have played them there so that as we move forward, the country understands exactly what is it that we are talking about in terms of this. We will break for tea, which is then going to allow you time, who is going to respond on what. The tea break will be 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Tea is outside.
How are you doing? I left an hour and 15 minutes and I'm from Century City. And then you still got to look at the park.
I wouldn't mind getting a copy of the, no, I think I've got enough in that bag. Do you have copies of the presentations?
I can always get that to you.
No, it was really keen on if you were going to be presenting there.
I would think that you would be.
Okay. Do you have copies of these on your email?
I do. I have our ones.
And do you have this? You haven't got him?
No.
Grab it. Should I just give you my Gmail address?
Okay, cool. All right.
But thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Some questions
because there are some similarities with his presentation, with some few new things that are coming up. So he was saying rather than the MRC responding and he then comes in and is the same thing, whether he wants to present now and then members will then ask questions and they see how then they respond, all of them as a team. More or less, he said it's more or less the same thing. I will never say with that, all the members, all of the class, and you promised me that it should be quick. Not quick, but it will be, you will try to be short and sweet. Over to you, are you connected? People that are advanced with technology, can they do it? Honorable James, I don't know why you are standing. Later, I don't know why you are on your feet. Okay. Yes, you must sit. You are to sit there. When the chair is there. Well, I understand, Honorable James, that he can chat when I'm talking, but anybody, if the chair is there. Is addressing the meeting, nobody's allowed to be on his or her feet. Honorable James, can you please look at it?
Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for the invitation. Professor Perry, I'm just also going to say who am I. I'm Professor Lukina from the University of Stellenbosch. I've been there, done that for many years. I'm a psychiatrist, associate professor at the university. My special interests are that of addiction, bioethics, but at heart I'm a clinician and teacher. And I want to share a few of the things on this topic. So Charles has said most of the stuff, and I don't want to repeat because I don't want to waste time. And what is important to me, it seems to me that if we do not know, we should know, and we should find out. And we should then agree on what are the information that we should know, and then research that information and then combine it with international information and international knowledge and things and make a decision. So let us just run through this quickly. You know the stuff. Cannabis has been known for 8,000 years. The plant is Cannabis sativa. The plant is a male plant and a female plant. Don't ask me to. The delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol is the psychotropic ingredient, the most active psychotropic ingredient, the THC. But there are many cannabinoids within the plant. Many cannabinoids have been identified. And we have also identified the receptor in the brain where the cannabinoids don't sit in the brain. And it's mainly in the basal ganglia. Mainly in the hippocampus, memory, that last intoxication was good, memory, hippocampus, and also the cerebellum, and that is why we are very worried about people intoxicated with cannabis and drive, because the basal ganglia and the cerebellum and driving, it doesn't work. So there are many ways to use cannabis. The most effective way to use cannabis is the soaking cannabis, because the lungs is a huge area that would absorb the cannabis very, very quickly, high levels in the blood, The peak effect will be within the 30 minutes. It will last 2 to 4 hours, and that is where you get most effect. So smoking is still the preferred way of use. It's most widely illegal drug in the world, and the potency over the past 20 years has improved tremendously. For potency by agricultural techniques. The dacha of today is not the cannabis of yesterday. The young people use cannabis, and they are getting younger, and they are getting younger. This is something that I must know. And as you have said, and I will reflect on that, it is the very young brain that is very vulnerable. The adult brain is not as vulnerable, but the young brain are particularly vulnerable to cannabis, and I will go into that. I will go into the physical stuff and later on. So just a little bit of background about cannabis. In psychiatry, I'm a psychiatrist. Yes, it is addictive. No two things about it. Dependency does develop. It is not as addictive as heroin, it's not as addictive as cocaine, but it's addictive. And people will steal and rape to get that effect in there. It is addictive. They would take any action to secure a supply. So this is an addictive drug. It gives you intoxication, it gives you withdrawal, it gives you psychosis, and I'll say something on psychosis. Your anxiety attack gives you flashbacks where non-smoking and then suddenly you will feel like if you had a cannabis attack, and it is cognitive impairment. It's cognitive impairment that our children do not achieve at school. It does not achieve, the mean IQ are lower because of the cognitive effect. It impairs our children becoming adults and preparing themselves for life. And motivational syndrome, by some conflict of this, is it real? Is it really an amotivational syndrome that there's no energy, there's no going on? Or is the subculture that would have been there anyway? But amotivation. Physically, and this is something that the child spoke on, but I just want to make something very clear. In South Africa, we've got an HIV plus TB. Remember, it's not overseas where you get HIV and no TB. The HIV people, they have no immunity, and they contract TB, and we've got treatment-resistant TB, and we've got all kinds of, and we've got loss of HIV and TB. And now, if you combine that with a drug-taking cluster, if you combine that with cannabis, it is not good. So the HIV and TB is a unique situation in South Africa, and cannabis has got the same negative effects on the respiratory system as cigarette smoking, the chronic obstructive lung disease. But cannabis burns with a very high temperature and the puffs, and it can give lots of mouth, it can give higher incidence mouth cancer and throat cancer and lung cancer. So it's got all the same negative effects of smoking cigarettes. And then also some of the stuff that we cultivate are infected with fungi and bacteria. That would give you a fungus infection and a bacterial infection. So it is not that safe. The long-term use, and I must reiterate, only human brain used as medicine for whatever good reason, it is not that dangerous. I give that, it's not that dangerous. But for our young people, it is very, very dangerous. Eventually, if you smoke a lot of cannabis for a long time, you can get cerebral atrophy, you can get seizures, chromosomal damage of the babies, blood defects, impaired immunity. It is not as innocent as that. Medicinal use, adults, well controlled, I haven't got a problem. So just a little bit about the cannabis and psychosis. The cannabis itself can vulnerable people. Most likely it is people who are genetically predisposed for the development of psychotic illness. So those vulnerable type of people. So some people are genetically vulnerable to remember psychosis. But those people get a diet form of cannabis to be a psychosis, a non-reality with hallucinations and a psychosis that lasts for hours and days. But cannabis makes you schizophrenia, especially to those who are genetically vulnerable for the development of schizophrenia. And with the study that Thomas has reiterated from that study that has been done in our department of psychiatry. And if cannabis has triggered schizophrenia, schizophrenia is mostly a lifelong cause. And they say there are literature that would say if you take all schizophrenics, the whole schizophrenic population, and we eradicate the cannabis, then there will be 8% less schizophrenia in the world. If you eradicate the cannabis, there will be 8%, which is significant. So cannabis can trigger schizophrenia in the world. The young brain is very vulnerable to cannabis. Cannabis is a neuromodulator. It regulates other transmitters, neurotransmitters. And as it does in its opioids, as morphine. And now it is a modulator of other neurotransmitter. As you bombard it with cannabis, it is havoc in the young brain. The young brain is very, very vulnerable to cannabis, and they later may develop a higher incidence of psychotic influence, and it has a negative influence. It stresses their learning ability and their intellectual function. Cannabis is also goes on the introduction drug. It is a gateway drug. I know. The argument is, yes, but so is alcohol. Yes, I know, so is alcohol. Well, let's just say that cannabis is also a gateway drug. Legalization of cannabis, according to the world literature, I agree with Charles, has not provided the world with clear positive outcomes. There are a lot of hidden facts about legalization of cannabis, talking legalization of cannabis. And I feel that we should not compare our country with the rest of the world. I think we have unique circumstances in our poverty. Our children haven't got homes, the violence in my country, no, we cannot compare my country with the rest of the world. We've got unique and specific vulnerability, especially when it comes to things like HIV and TB and no work and no homes and no support systems. Please. Reality. The drug-induced psychosis is a major burden on the available psychiatric beds. I mean, at Strickland Hospital, I've been the clinical head of Strickland Hospital for 20 years. Oh, I fight for beds, and I fight for medicine. And get the patient out, get one in that is more diseased. Get one out, get in that is more diseased. What we call the toxic psychosis, or the drug-induced psychosis, are an overwhelming problem in our health system. An overwhelming problem. A huge burden. And if I can take away the drug-induced psychosis, I've got enough beds. But now I've got 3-4 wards full of psychotic people that have been in there because of not only cannabis, but also the cannabis and the whole polytrichosis. So, what are we doing today in preparation for myself? I said, we are not talking about legalization today. We are not talking about decriminalization today. We are talking about medicinal use of cannabis. And I agree, I would also like to get rid of the commercial industrial purposes because I don't know what, I don't know the hemp t-shirts, and I don't know what it says. I do not know what industrial and commercial purposes impact. I don't know. I'm ignorant of that. So I think we should concentrate on the medicinal use of cannabis. And then the three important questions, and it came up in Professor Perry's presentation. What are we going to develop? The medicinal use in what form? Are we going to talk about the soaking the plant? Are we going to talk about the dachafutis in the water book? Are we going to talk about the pellet form? Are we going to talk about the synthetic, or are we the liquid extract or the oral mucosal spray and inhalers? They are trying to escape the smoking effect and the lung effect by doing vaporizers and humidification and like you serve in the pens and this stuff. So, what are we talking about in this bill? I don't know. Please answer me that. And the medical use, for what conditions? If you study the literature, you will see cancer, dementia, pain, diabetes, epilepsy, glaucoma, Tourette syndrome, nausea with chemotherapy, HIV, the anorexia, the multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic pain disorder, poor appetite, and headaches. Would you please note, would you please take note of the slippery slope problem here? The slippery slope problem, if we do not tie down fibromyalgia, if we do not tie down the nausea of cancer, if we do not tie down, what are we going to do? It is free for all. It is going to be a slippery slope, and tomorrow I do it for appetite, and I do it for your headache, and I do it for your weight loss. And to me, it is a worry that for what condition, and we must contemplate that. And then, prescribed by whom? Is this going to be GPs? Is it going to be generalists? Or is it going to be specialists? And people say it's going to save us cost. Is it going to be there for the one in well again? Or is it going to be for all my people? It's going to be available for all my people in the country. So is it again for the economics for the privileged few, or is it going to be for all my people? And I think that is important that we should consider. Okay, the different forms of cannabis and the different effects. There's lots of cannabinols and there's lots of cannabidiols. So the different product has got different effects. And if we do not know, Professor Perry, we've got to find out what cannabidiol or cannabinol, this product is effective for what disorder. So the tetrahydrocannabinol of cannabidiol, first, then leave that alone. Smoked cannabis will have the best effect because of the absorption and the availability and the very high blood levels. The FDA has approved two synthetic cannabinoids, and that is not the product of the plant. That's not the plant product. That is purely a molecule devised in the laboratory. Okay, and that is dronabinol and nabinol. The world literature, I agree again with Professor Perry, the world literature on treatment outcomes based on proper peer-reviewed research results on the benefits of treatment are unclear and clear. It is not that obvious. It is not. If we really read the academic literature, the peer-reviewed literature, the real McCoy, then it is not that clear. So, and then the medical views in all those countries, and in, you said, it's in 30 states in the USA, legislation for medical and scientific use is on the rise, it's on the increase, and I'm an advocate for that. But proper licensing, control of the people who cultivate, the manufacturers, the distributors, the prescribers, and the specific indications is a must. It's a must. If we do not know, we have to know. We have to find out. And for that, we must research. Now, if the research is before the bill or after the bill, That is the stuff that I don't understand. So, before we approve this bill, we need to answer the following questions. Do we, clinicians, and our clients, need more effective treatment for the name disorders and thus allow progress in science and treatment outcomes? My sister now has been diagnosed with cancer and is on chemotherapy and is suffering. Of course the answer is yes. If I can get progression in science, if I can have more treatment options, have more effective treatment options, we've got very good painkillers. We've got fantastic painkillers. But sometimes we need augmentation. The best plus augmentation. We can even make it better. So I cannot and I will not stop progress. But then we must know exactly what we're going to do. So, do we truly know exactly what should be researched? The effects of smoked cannabis, the liquid cannabis, the oral spray, the inhaled, the vapor, just simply what are we going to research? Two, what disorders? I'm very worried that we're going to, I've got a poor appetite, so I get a prescription of cannabis from my dog. I'm very worried about undefined brain. I'm worried about that there's going to be a slippery slope. There's been a slippery slope, and we're just going to have more and more and more diagnoses that we could prescribe this to. So I'm worried about point number two. Point number three, what product is effective? What product effectively treat what disorder? And I agree with you, the clinicians should tell us. We should do the research and say, this product, we should do the proper research and see what is coming out of the proper research before we just open up something that we cannot reverse. Can our current system regulate and police manufacturers? Can our current system regulate and police manufacturers, cannabis distributors to limit the total cannabis market for medical and scientific purposes only? I cannot answer this question, but we need to know. We need to know we can control and this. Then, can medicalization of cannabis produce foreseen and unforeseen negative results? The people out there, the, my community, the people out in my country, if we have now said this drug, if cannabis is safe enough to use in the diseased people, if we get this message across, it is safe. After the bill, the public may perceive the use of cannabis as safe, healthy, socially acceptable, and increasingly recreational use, including in vulnerable populations, and that is what Professor Perry has told us. And the world experiences not clear on this. If you read the world literature, it's not clear on this. So we've got to be careful. So the question that is needed, when I read the world, do we need the world? I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable about that. Can the MCC, the Medical Confirmed Council, and Good Research Ethics Committee not initiate this kind of treatment? Do we need a herbivore? I don't know. Definitions. Cannabinoids. And the cannabinoids, the definition as in the bill as it is written now, does not include synthetic drugs. Because that's not a product of drug. So that is just something that we must put right. In the envisage action, do we aim at specialist level or at medical professional level? Define commercial and industrial use. I just don't know. I know you get hemp t-shirts and stuff. I don't know. So somebody will have to spell out what is commercial and industrial use. Who would decide on the level of the pilot health system? Who's going to do this research? Are the MCC and research ethics committees, are they included in this research? Point 4E, 4E, informed consent. Remember that the Children's Act, informed consent for medical treatment is down to 12 years. To 12 years. So if we say that people can, a 12-year-old child can give informed consent, he can also give informed consent to what now we said we can use it for medical. So the Children's Act has made the informed consent age for medical treatment much younger, and I'm worried about they for the most vulnerable brain. Shem A, no one shall be liable or guilty. Let's not clear that sentence. Define what can we produce and by whom. Memorandum, in the background, in the document. Legally, doctors are, or clinicians are legally be prevented from prescribing harmless treatments. I'm sorry, that's wrong. You cannot use words like, it is harmless. No, we cannot do that. I don't think so. Memorandum background, end paragraph. Death on a mass scale. I think that's wrong, and I think that is just plain rhetoric. Using words and emotions. Memorandum 3, reduce the cost of private and public health without imposing additional cost to the state. I'm not sure about that. I am not sure about that. Who are going to pay for regulating this? What are the costs of these very, very difficult, these inhalers and vaporizers, and who's going to pay for that? Is it going to go again to those who have, and not all my people? I think we've got to have a very study on what the costs of this really will be, and not accept that this is going to not cost us anything. So, the bill on innovation should be read in conjunction with a circular that we have that we got from the Department of Health, circular H56 of 2013, of the written case to the CEOs of hospitals and directors, deans, etc., on the unique and novel therapies, where they would define what is innovative therapies and what the clinicians should put in place, the research ethics committees, the informed consent, the reversal, we should read this bill also in context with the circular 856 of 2013. So, in summarize, from my side, I've got an overall yes for the bill. Because I do not know, I have to know, and for that I have to do research. Because I want, if we could have progress in science, if we could secure more treatment options and better treatment outcomes, yes, then we must do it. And we owe it to our population and peoples. To complete the document, get rid of the uncertainties, make it more comprehensive, to be clear about what we would really like to achieve. It would be huge economic benefits for our country. And the next step is to answer the necessary question as to know what is truly worth doing. As to know what is truly worth doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Kinal. As one of the members in the MRC, in his presentation, there are similarities. And I don't know whether members want to ask him questions or Professor will then also assist in the response to questions that have been asked. Then when you are through with the answering of the questions, I think we'll just give another round, just a short round to just try and see if we can then combine everything together. Honourable Mayor?
No, thanks, and welcome to this by the professor. I just want to quickly last where you say an overall yes for the professor.
Sorry?
Where you say an overall yes for the professor. But it's part of questions that you are raising. and you say you don't have answers. Is that not a contradiction? For the overall, yes, for the overall. But you've got many asked questions that you don't have answers yourself, that you are saying we must still go and find answers. How then do you arrive at an overall yes without those answers? Because my view will be that let's go and find those answers. And once you've answered those answers, then you can come back and say, no, we've got the answers now. And then we can arrive at an overall yes or no, based on the answers that we found, on the questions that you've raised, which you say they will, you don't have answers. And we still have to find the answers to those questions. The second issue is that you're raising a very critical issue. One, the challenge that we have in country of high violence, especially violence against women and children, and the effect this will have, especially when the bill becomes a yes, as you are saying yes, and you are saying it will then create a perception to the general public that it is safe, it is healthy, social acceptability, and it will also increase the recreational use of the gun, because the perception that will be created by that decision will be to say to the public, now it is a public, I mean, Parliament has agreed that we can use we can use cannabis, and therefore it is safe to use, and then people will begin to use it in any. And the challenges of policy will be huge bet on the state, on how you regulate, how you police. Do you have the capacity to police? Taking into consideration that we've got high rate crime in the country, do you want to add additional burden to the police to do this work and make it and add more burden to them, taking into consideration the current challenges that we have around crime and the capacity that the police is battling in dealing with the current situation, and the perception that we have to the public that there's a higher rate of crime in South Africa, and especially the crime against women and children. And we add this, it's not going to create more problems if we then say we allow it. And then the issue of the effect to young people, that you are really saying it is a huge impact on the IQ of young people. And in terms of the Children Act that now allows 12 years to consent, what then, if you say yes, then are we saying, are we not creating a problem, as you say? That's why I find it difficult to match some of the areas that we are raising as problematic, and at the end we are saying yes for all. But the issue that you are raising for me, create an impression that it is going to be a very, very difficult process to manage, taking into consideration some of the laws that exist, some of the rights that exist. Once you say this should be legal, it should be part of the criminalized or legalized, whatever term that becomes used. I was not aware that he has got a huge IQ, I just tell him, into young people. During break, I was telling other people that due to involvement at the youth stage with some other people who use DAH, I find myself indirectly using it. And I was telling people that how I wrote my trick, I can't even define. I mean, many people didn't finish the match paper, and they said it was so difficult. And it took me 1 hour, 15 minutes to finish it. and I was up, and I got B out of it. So I had always had an impression that no, it has got a huge impact. Now I'm getting a difference, so now I just got a negative impact into the IQ of young people. It's very interesting to know that. I thought it just got the opposite.
I'm aware it's quite an informative and exciting and frustrating subject that we're talking about. But I just want to sensitize members that we've got two other presentations. Not unless those presenters are going to suggest, not now, but they are two hands, are going to say, yes, even in our presentations, there are similarities, but we'd like just to zoom onto the negative, onto the different things that didn't deflect. I don't want us to be in a hurry. I don't want us to put to prep our track. I don't want us to do that. In our first meeting, remember, we said we need to listen to a number of people. We need to have an intensive research before we do anything. So I'm requesting anybody who's here, including members, to take it cool. We have got a huge responsibility in front of us for the country, and therefore we can't be behind. And we need to be patient. But I would, after the two members whose hands are up, I'll check with the two remaining presenters, what so that they're able to more engage with them. It's Honorable Maisela and it's Honorable James.
Thanks, Prof. Let's do the malapropism of Dr. Doolittle. We shall kill them, provided they will not die. You said, okay, fine, you have a yes, overall yes for the bill. Provided, we cannot be better than our knowledge. And I suppose it's our knowledge that makes us better. So it's okay, it's my profusion. Yeah. And then we could have progress in science should we secure more treatment options and better illness outcomes, provided we know what we are doing. To complete the document, get rid of uncertainties and make it more comprehensive so that we know what we are doing and we are better than our knowledge. For economic benefit of the country, provided it doesn't harm anybody, we can make more money. And so on and so on. But it's very nice. It really explains. I understand, maybe I'm psychotic, I understand better what you are trying to say here. In fact, you are just saying, and in fact, the first question you asked, do we really need a bill? The one you support wholeheartedly, we really need it. So I understand what you are saying. Maybe I can read your mind better than my own. But here, you put it very clearly that this is a non-starter. If I understand you very well, this thing is a non-starter. We don't need it. So that's your question. Do we really need the pill? Can we be better than our knowledge? And so on and so on. I appreciate that. And in fact, it's in my mind better than what we've been saying all along. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to make a procedural point. This, as pointed out already, is this committee's mandate is to review the appropriate legal use of marijuana for medical purposes. We can't discuss the question of commercialization. That's another committee. So I'm just deaf to that altogether. Because it gets us into this huge distraction. Because if you discuss commercialization and general use, then why are we regulating, why is it legal for South Africans to have access to alcohol and to tobacco as far more poisonous than marijuana? So I don't want to get into that discussion here. I think it's a distraction. This is about enlarging the scope for the legal, expanded and easier use of marijuana for medical purposes. Thanks.
And also, before you, Honorable Chairman, before you, with understanding what Honorable James is saying, I agree, but remember that you said people must come and make presentations. And in them making those presentations, they will touch on some of the things, which are things that we must then agree that we could be focusing on. Caden industry is there for all this. If that's what we are saying, we must say it. I think that, and presenters like, yeah, I think it's the second voice that says, no. But that is not our domain. So I must not get a feeling that we are trying to, or the presenters that are going to come in, they must not feel intimidated, they must understand, we will say no. Maybe in how we then say disagree with K part of it, it must not create a little bit of fear. I fully agree with you. We must try and avoid issues that are going to take us the other way. But we have grown up that we are against that. And even if a presenter is going to make that presentation, which is going to state that, it is fine. But as this committee, I think more than two members have raised that. It's going to be Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to follow on Honorable James, for those members of the public that are here that may not know the processes, which you know and we know, I mean, the committee has still not even considered a motion of desirability. Whether the objects of this bill are desirable for South Africans, that is something that will come at a later stage. And that will come at the stage after all these research and questions have been asked. Do we need it? Don't we need it? My sense is from the presenters today, including Professor Vina, colleague, he didn't say the bill is a non-starter. I mean, in his own thing here on the last bill, he says we need a bill, but he's given certain cautionary advice, which the committee must take into account as we move forward. See, at the end of the day, it's a chicken and an egg situation, so I just want to repeat this question so MRC and Department of Health and Labor can answer. If we are saying there has to be research, which we agree, and if we are saying remove commercialization and things like that, which we agree as well, we are saying that. For that research to start, to get off the starting blocks, do we need any other kind of legislative mechanism to allow that to happen so that the researchers can use this product, which is illegal, in their research moving forward? If we are told there is legislation at the moment, then that must be cited to say there is legislation, research and continue. If there isn't legislation, then we've got to create a mechanism for research to continue. Thank you.
We will, because I don't want us to go backwards and forth. Do you agree, Honorable Members, that we don't get any indication from the last two presenters so that when we then speak, we don't speak, not unless their presentation is completely different from the two presentations? Can I get that so that Honorable Members are able to take a decision on an informed environment?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. May I bring my computer to the front? No, I'm actually looking at international conventions. I'm looking at South Africa, what structures to be placed, and what is my experience with the countries that I've been negotiating with. So it's slightly different.
And Professor Latia Mani, my apologies, if I can't pronounce.
My presentation is covered in the presentation by the Medical Research Council and Professor Pinar, except that I don't agree with questions posed at the end by Professor Pinar. But I think the legal issues that are addressed by the Medical Research Council are appropriate. And secondly, I think we have to look at the broader issues in the continent. South Africa is not isolated from the continent. I'm the current president of the African Association of Psychiatrists, and I can tell you that most African countries do not even want to think about this process because they think our control mechanisms are poor. We don't even know how to control prescribed pain medication. I serve on the health committee of the Health Professions Council, and most doctors that we see there are addicted to pain medication that is prescribed for our patients and themselves. Now, when you include cannabis, you're confounding issues. The second, the last thing I want to say is that we have about 85 cannabinoids, and we have a reasonable balance between 9 tetrahydrocannabinoids and CBD, which cannot be deal. Now, I think we do need to do some research before we pass a bill, because what we see in the clinical setting, I ran a ward, psychiatry ward at Russian Curry Hospital. Many of the youngsters that are coming in there have used cannabis, either on its own in combination with other substances. But they're using the plant, the raw effective, in various forms. They don't know how to isolate the good stuff from the bad stuff. What's coming out in the literature is the fact that the problematic substance is the THC, by and large. CBD is based on different set of profiles. If it could isolate it sufficiently, and you know, and I think Professor Pinader mentioned the various areas of the body weight works, so it may be helpful. That was mentioned also by Charles Perry. We would then say, having isolated this particular substance, who then monitors its control prescription, and who trains the people who are going to prescribe it? I think those things have to be in place. And of course, the last thing that Medical Research Council mentioned is the issue of other parties that may claim certain issues in terms of the use of the substance. So I'm not saying yes or no to the bill, but I'm just saying there are problems. We need to do research. We need to look at whether, as a country, able to isolate the most relevant cannabinoids that can be useful in various places, epilepsy, enhancer, pain relief, in various, conditions like spasms and so on, Crohn's disease and so on. There are many, almost every condition, including asthma, insulin and so on. There's some role, but there are specific cannabinoids. I sent a wheel of cannabis to the organization there that will show the different areas. I think at some stage we'll pull it up. But it shows you that every part of the body is affected. Almost every disease can benefit to a certain degree to different combinations of cannabinoids. That is where it will take this country many years. It's going to take us a lot of money. But, and I want you to go back to the fact that we are not yet, stating any positives or negatives about the bill. Thank you very much, Amisha.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think all the presentations are more or less the same. We will allow responses, and then after that, if that is fine, then allow Dr. Naidoo to speak, because he is coming from another different angle and some experiences as he has said. It's then over to you, MRC, Dr. Pnaz. I would imagine that you were here when members were asking questions. You will also come in and assist in the response. I would appreciate if you can come on this side so that I'm able to see you when you're talking. Sit or you can sweat. You can sweat. Over to you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you for allowing us to discuss this. So we are medical scientists, we are medical researchers, we form the Medical Research Council, and I want to say unequivocally that the Medical Research Council supports research into cannabis, medicinal research into the medicinal use of cannabis. And we support support research into looking at the biological plausibility of medical cannabis and what indications it has for use. We support the preclinical and clinical research to looking into the effects. We want to know the mechanism of action and for what indication, for what order. So if we say that cannabis works for muscle sclerosis, we would like to see the biological plausibility and the mechanism of action like with any other drug. We believe that you need to conduct well-designed randomized clinical trials. They must be well controlled, well designed, and well analyzed. Okay, and we also have to know the products we are using. We need good quality products, and we need to understand the dose and the mode of administration. We need pharmacovigilance. People were worried about the unintended consequences of the side effects or the adverse events or the social consequences of medicinal use of cancer of cannabis, and we need to do pharmacovigilance, which we would do in any product development pipeline. We need to understand the dose versus the toxicity. We heard about psychosis, we heard about motivational syndrome, and we need to understand how the dose relates into the side effects that we see. So we support research, we support research into reproductive toxicity. We spoke about we heard a lot of qualitative anecdotes about the effects, and we need to know evidence. You know, we can't just talk about anecdotes. We support empirical research on it. We support that the Medical Research Council actually is the research center. We have multidisciplinary teams. We have pharmacologists, we have doctors, we have psychologists. We understand clinical research, and we believe we're the best people to be the research center because we can do well-conducted studies. We support other research, like best research, like Cochrane, and understand some of the gaps, but we do not believe that the data that's available at the moment is sufficient enough, and we need to conduct prospective, well-controlled, and well executed trials so we can understand exactly what the use of medicinal cannabis would be. Just to clarify and correct my honourable psychiatrist here about informed consent, the Department of Health and the National Research Ethics and the Health Act strictly regulates research into adolescents and young children. We have to get special ministerial permission to do any clinical trial in people under 21. So any therapeutic or non-therapeutic trial, be it social, behavioral, or medicinal, or international, requires very, very strict interacting with adolescents. So we can't just give unregistered products to anybody. It's well controlled by the Department of Health and the Medicines Control Council and Ethics Committee. So please do not think that we do research in adolescents without control. We cannot do that. The Minister of Health carefully governs that. So please disregard the fact that we'll be experimenting unnecessarily on children. We can't do that. We need to understand the bioavailability. You asked about the dose. And I think at this moment in time, the bioavailability, the dose, the toxicity needs to be carefully understood. And that's why the FDA has had the issues around the dose. In terms of cancer, the MRC spends sits around just over 2 million rand a year on cancer. It's clearly not enough. It's 5% of our budget, but we fund against the 10 most common causes of death in our country, and we would welcome a huge injection of money for clinical research. The US spends trillions on cancer research. They investigate everything from personalized medicine to immunological based medicine. We are far behind in terms of addressing it. But we do everything, we do everything from discovery to screening and surveillance and monitoring and evaluation. And we do know that it takes 20 years, or maybe if we're lucky, to take a discovery into clinical trial, into licensure. So we need to do that, and we need to continue to do clinical research and cancer research and discovery research in cancer. It's critical for our knowledge economy and for our presence in the global sphere. My colleagues will talk about the Section 21. Section 21 does allow us to use unregistered drugs in this country for use, and it's strictly governed by the Medicines Control Council, but I think Anban from the Public Health will expand on that. And so I just want to reiterate, we support the medical research into cannabis. We're not talking about medical use because we don't know enough about it at the moment in time.
Anybody who wants to speak before I allow for today from the two doctors? Any members have asked questions? But there were more comments than in fact questions. But it looks possibly.
Thanks, Chair. Just to explain, there are two processes. One is the Section 21. And Section 21 relates to a particular patient who has tried all the available therapies that are registered in South Africa. And the clinician believes there may be an opportunity
for a product that may provide some clinical benefit to that patient. And in such circumstances, the clinician can then motivate as to what product it is and how he thinks the patient may potentially benefit from it. Once the patient gives consent for the use of that particular product, and we identify where the source of the product is, in other words, it must be a credible source. It's not something that's kind of sold through someone's garage. It's a credible pharmaceutical source, so it's a safe product in our assessment, but not registered in South Africa. We would allow limited quantities of the product to be brought in for the particular patient. The doctor then, after a period of time, usually we give him 3 months, to then capture the clinical benefits that this product has had on the patient. And if there are clinical benefits that have been derived, the patient may get more of a particular product. We also monitor the adverse effects, and based on that, we then allow access. In the case of cannabis particularly, around 20 patients have already had access to the product using the two commercially available ones that Professor Perry put up on the screen. And so patients have had access to products, particularly in case of pain management, where I think, as the prophet indicated, you need something, after using all of the analgesics, you need something to augment your pain benefit. And so there was an opportunity to do that in those circumstances. I also want to then explain research in cannabis. So if you wanted to do a clinical trial using cannabis or any other drug for that matter, there's a clinical trials committee in the Medicine Control Council. One puts together a protocol for studying a particular drug and condition. There are rules about how that trial must be done based on ethics and scientific research. Once the committee looks at that, they ask some questions about design and science, because once a trial is done, it also answers a particular clinical question. And if the trial is not appropriately done, it won't do that. So the committee makes sure that that science is right. And once it's done, the researcher then gets approval to access whatever it is that he or she wants to research and then produce the results. So the researcher will then indicate how long the trial will take, and then they provide interim results. At the end of the research, if you want to expand to more sites and the like, the NCC will then look at that. But currently, there are hundreds of compounds around that are not registered. Similar to cannabis, I suppose, in some nature, we don't know how harmful they are or how beneficial they are, but research is going on in the country around them. And so the legislation currently allows that to happen. The other question that was asked today, if I can just answer, is around how do you get from plants to medicines in terms of production? So in most cases, research that's done identified an active ingredient in a plant. But once you've identified the active ingredient, it's usually not economical to keep growing plants in order to extract the active ingredient. Scientists then sit in the lab and look at the molecular structure of that compound and say, what are the potential receptors? How can we synthetically make the same product? And so that's what happened with the two synthetic products. So they then said, okay, we can produce this. This would be the chemical synthesis to produce this. And then they go about doing it. But many products were discovered in plants, but you don't have to keep growing plants in order to make the product, because economically, it doesn't make sense to actually do that.
No, thank you, all the members. We will then get
I want to respond to the question about the abuse potential of medicinal cannabis. We have very good data on the abuse potential for recreational cannabis use, but that's a separate issue. And we don't have very good research evidence on the adverse effects of medicinal cannabis. So what Ray referred to, the research, more research would be, we would need to undertake more research to really understand the number of adverse consequences and how prevalent adverse consequences are amongst people who are treated using medicinal cannabis. But current analgesics that are used, certainly for cancer pain management, are opiate-based. And we know that opiate-based medications are far more addictive and physiologically dependence-producing than cannabis-based products.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to talk to the issue that was raised about the pilot clinics, which is in the bill, and what the Medical Research Council's view on that is. Our position is we would prefer the research to be done through the Medical Research Council's cancer research centres, which we've set up 3 in the last year, I think. And I think that would be a better mechanism for conducting research rather than setting up new private centres somewhere around South Africa. So I think that would be our recommendation. They're linked to hospitals, and so they would have a good connection between researchers and patients. If we had more money to do research on the topic, we could also put out calls for requests for applications, where we would set certain questions and then ask for answers. And that could look even at things like the delivery mechanism. What is a cheap, cost-effective delivery mechanism that would work in South Africa? So we have an interest in medical devices. So these, I agree with Professor Pinar. We need to make treatments available to everybody, not just to the people who can afford them. And currently the vaporizers are, they would cost more than 1,000 rand, probably 2,000 rand, and that would possibly be too expensive. So we would certainly be interested in doing that. Thank you.
I'm going to finally say that we do need to investigate alternatives to some of the current medication. I have an 18-year-old daughter who has multiple sclerosis. She's writing the trick. Every day of her life, she cries about a headache. I import under Section 21. I bring in a drug, dimethyl fumarate, from the US to manage her MS. She has ongoing activity. When you do an MRI scan on her brain, you see the degradation of the myelin around her nerves. I have heard that MS, that cannabis may help MS, but I am unable to investigate this further because of the lack of controls and the lack of design studies. And so I do think that whether it's cannabis or other alternatives, people do need cheap alternatives to chronic pain. And I can attest that having a daughter who's writing a check with pain every day is very overwhelming. So I would suggest that we also look at the evidence of alternatives so that we can manage in a cheap way people's pain, particularly fibromyalgia and MS.
We will then allow Dr. Nigel to take us through. I don't know whether you want to be seated there or you can leave. I can see that I think there's too much what is it? There are windows here. Unfortunately, Honourable Members and our guests couldn't get a smaller committee room. A bigger one, my apologies. This is the effect of it, a bigger. So we are scrambled in this one, our apologies. I don't know that the aircon, do you want the aircon to be on or you want to open the door? Okay, you can take us through though. Can we please check in our documents there? I'm told we do have Dr. Nigel's presentation, but not in a format that he's going to reflect here. I hope it's not going to create a... Is it this? Yes. You will read through this. But you're using pictures. Okay.
can continue, and then we'll see if that is going to disadvantage members in terms of the flow and understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Yolanda. Thank you, Excellency, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the invitation to comment on the Medical Innovation Law. Just to start off with, my background is in working with patients with addiction disorders for the last 24 years. I established a private inpatient facility and was involved in setting up the International Society of Addiction Medicine in the late 1990s, the American Society of Addiction Medicine, and many other organizations. I later served, well, apart from encouraging changes in benefit structures so that people with addiction can have treatment, I also got involved at the Nelson Mandela Medical School in training third-year students, getting them to understand addiction and let them work with patients with addiction. Subsequently, I served on the Central Drug Authority, and then I was nominated to the International Narcotics Control Board, and I was elected at the Economic and Social Council at the United Nations in New York, and I served for 5 years, eventually becoming its president. It was a difficult 5 years because it was the time when the whole, you need to understand the big picture. The big picture is not medical cannabis. The big picture is legalization. And in every country, it has always started with medical cannabis. In the United States, which is the forerunner of this issue, it started as illegal medical cannabis schemes in states against the federal government, against the FDA, against the American Psychiatry Association. Obviously, in the last few years, you know what has happened, and I think my colleagues have covered that. The situation with Netherlands, where the whole idea in the Netherlands was harm reduction, there was a very high incidence of intravenous heroin use, and the logic was that if you allow people to use cannabis, then maybe your heroin use will reduce. But however, the Netherlands also is looking at the folly of that kind of policy. Many other countries have followed suit, and many of other countries in some way or the other have looked at medical cannabis, looked at legalization, etc. So currently in the world, there is one country only that is totally in contradiction with the 1961 Convention, which South Africa is signatory to, and that's Uruguay, which has authorized now cannabis for the use for recreational purposes. The United States federal government technically is in violation because one part of the convention says that you need to apply your convention over all your territories. So because of its federal structure, it looks like and it seems that there's difficulty in managing its own states. So I just want to go through a little bit of this, and I want to say that the last report which I signed off for the INCB was published, was launched in March of this year, And I asked for a special topic to be discussed, and that special topic was the control measures applicable to programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes pursuant to the 1961 Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. And I think it's important that we look at what is the legislative structure at the international level, and all countries that are signatory to the convention are supposed to translate that structure into their national level. At the moment, the United Nations Office on Drug and Crime and the Commission on Narcotic Drugs is looking and reviewing what they call the model law. So, I've actually not put too much of words on my slides because I thought talking is better and maybe just being able to get you to know what's happening on the international level. I would, as a South African, I would not like to see my country being used. At this moment, there is a major lobby throughout the world which is influencing academics and influencing very significant personalities to be able to look at the end result. Unfortunately, the academics and other personalities are really being recruited for an end game, which I'm going to describe to you just now. Unfortunately, they come in with good intention. So, I will read this just now, but let me just read my first presentation. I said the bill, as it stands, is ambiguous and lends itself to contradiction. It is termed the Medical Innovation Bill. Now, if we look at the recently in the United Kingdom, there was the Medical Innovation Bill. I'm not sure if people are familiar with that. And that Medical Innovation Bill is different from our Medical Innovation Bill. And there's a simple logic in that one. The simple logic is there is something now in Big Pharma which is called orphan drugs. Orphan drugs are medications that are made for very rare diseases. And rare diseases, therefore, you won't have number of participants for clinical trial. And because you don't have number of participants for clinical trial, the Medical Innovation Bill was suggested and mooted to be able to say, we will allow multidisciplinary teams to get together and say, for this patient who's got this rare disease, we will try a certain medication depending on the multidisciplinary team. It is not intended. It was intended, but it was actually vetoed because it should have never been intended for diseases where there are large cohorts or large number of patients. For example, cancer. If you have cancer, there are many patients who have cancer. So you don't need a medical innovation bill for that because you can do a random clinical trial, which is covered by our existing laws and the UK also. So I think that's where they are stuck. So that's where I would support a medical innovation bill in that kind of scenario where you have rare disease, you don't have cohorts, and you need to allow doctors to be able to use medication and clinically assess it in that situation. However, that's still different from this bill. So we are terming this the Medical Innovation Bill, yet it extends its mandate, as our colleagues have said, to include commercial industrial applications without defining these applications. It is clearly focused on cannabis legalization, which is in contravention with the definitions of the United Nations 1961 Convention as amended by the 1972 Protocol with South Africa and Spain, and which restricts cannabis to medical and scientific purposes. Well, not really only cannabis, any controlled substance is restricted to medical and scientific purposes. With Article 28, which is the establishment of a national cannabis agency that becomes a central repository of cannabis that may be offered for manufacture and production and scientific use for cannabinoid products or products from the cannabis plant. Countries developing such agencies must accede to the system of estimates as per the United Nations Drug Conventions. And cannabis cultivated for industrial purposes, example hemp, are not included in the 1961 Convention. So having a separate law for a situation like hemp, which has very low, it's the same plant, but a very low THC content. And if you look at hemp growing in the wild field, they usually grow hemp very tall, and cannabis grows very out. So it's very difficult to have a hemp farm for industrial use, which has low cannabis content, and therefore is not abusable as such for industrial purposes. There's really no problem with that. Our problem is with the cannabis contents which are higher, which is the bushes that grow a little wider. So the bill seeks to legalize the cultivation and trade of cannabis products using the medical use as a Trojan horse. It confuses cannabis as being similar to common chemicals like bicarbonate of soda in one sentence,
without recognizing that cannabis is a dangerous drug, and that is why it is controlled. It's not bad because it's controlled, it's dangerous, and that's why it's controlled. It's further produced cannabis has been in the public domain, which really is illegal. Cannabis is illegal, right? And that document and that sentence is really an affront to current legislation. It is clear the supporters of the bill as it stands are focused on widespread cannabis legalization. The bill creates an opportunity to get one foot in the door towards legalization for recreational use. And I want to go back and I want to say, I would not like my country and well-meaning citizens. I would not like my country and well-meaning citizens who have good intention to provide legal product to be taken into a system which opens the door to put pressure on different areas. So there's no current best practice, because I think there's a statement in the book saying current best practice. There's no current best practice as to the use of medical marijuana, save that medical marijuana schemes in some states of the United States of America, which are uncontrolled and are in violation of federal law. And that's, in many countries, I've misinterpreted. And I think this is where the big problem has been. In the days of Nixon, the whole drug legislation was misinterpreted into a war on drugs. And really, when I looked at the whole issue of the conventions are really a human rights convention. There's total misinterpretation. And all my negotiations with the White House and the OECD get them to start understanding that if you guys interpreted the conventions properly, you would have had a more health-directed approach to this issue. So what has happened? So this is the major lobbies that are looking at legislation have cottoned on to this idea of the war on drugs and says, let's move from war on drugs to legalization of drugs. When really what should have happened, medical cannabis schemes or agencies should have been set up a long time ago and we wouldn't have had this problem. So now you would find that no one would be able to say now that there is no cannabis products for medical use. So I suggest that if we start looking at this issue, we should be in compliance with the convention. The conventions allow for medical cannabis agencies to be set up for medical and scientific purposes with good parameters, and which I will talk about here now. So I want to refer you to this special topic, and I want to read through this. So there's a few paragraphs. The Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs of 1961, as amended by the 1972 Protocol, limits the use of narcotic drugs, including cannabis, to medical and scientific purposes. Like other narcotic drugs under international control, cannabis is subject to a variety of control measures aimed at preventing its diversion into illicit channels and its abuse. In recognition of the risks of cannabis abuse, the substance has been subjected to the highest levels of control under the Single Convention, its inclusion in Schedules 1 and 4, the latter of which contains substances particularly liable to abuse and to produce ill effects. When you listen to Schedule 1 and 4, do not relate it to South African schedules. Our schedules are a little different. We are in Schedule 6. The Single Convention allows state parties to use cannabis for medical purposes. I think it's colored. Reflecting concerns about abuse and diversion, the Single Convention establishes an additional set of control measures which should be implemented in order for programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes to be compliant with the convention. The board reminds all governments in jurisdictions having established programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes or considering to do so, that in addition to reporting and licensing obligations applicable to all narcotic drugs, the Single Convention requires that states having such programs comply with several specific obligations. Pursuant to Article 23 and 28, Article 23 is talking about the opium agencies, which relates to the cannabis agencies of Single Convention. States wishing to establish programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes that are consistent with the requirements of the Single Convention must establish a national cannabis agency to control, to supervise, and license the cultivation of cannabis crops. The obligations incumbent upon national cannabis agencies include the designation of the areas in which cultivation is permitted, the licenses of cultivators, the purchase and taking of physical possession of the crops. That means the government takes the crop physically. They also have the exclusive right of wholesale trading and maintaining stocks. In addition, governments must work to prohibit the unauthorized cultivation of cannabis plants
and seize and destroy illicit crop. Whenever the prevailing conditions in their territories render such measures the most suitable course of action in order to protect the public health and to prevent illicit trafficking in accordance with Article 2 and 22 of the Single Convention. Finally, governments must adopt such measures as may be necessary to prevent the misuse of and illicit trafficking in cannabis leaves in accordance with Article 28 of the Single Convention. The board has reviewed the issue of cultivation of cannabis for personal medical use and has determined that in the light of the heightened risk of diversion it represents, such cultivation does not meet the minimum control requirements set up in the Single Convention. Accordingly, the board has consistently maintained the position that a state which allows individuals to cultivate cannabis for personal use would not be in compliance with its legal obligations under the Single Convention. And this on the side is what happened in Canada. And now they're revoking because they allow people to do personal usage. And now they're changing the law. In addition to the risk of diversion cited above, allowing private individuals to produce cannabis for personal medical consumption may produce and present health risks. In the dosages and levels of THC consumed may be different from those medically prescribed. What remains, remind all governments in jurisdictions that have established programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes or that are considering to do so about the aforementioned requirements of the convention. The board notes that the control measures in place under many existing programs in different countries fall far short of the requirements set out above and encourages all governments in jurisdictions that have approved or plan to implement such programs take measures to ensure that these programs fully implement the measures provided for in the Single Convention. These are aimed at ensuring the stocks of cannabis produced for medical use are reserved for the patients for whom they are prescribed and not diverted into illicit channels. The board urges all governments in jurisdictions that have established programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes to ensure that the prescription of cannabis for medical use is performed with competent medical knowledge and supervision, and that prescription practice is based on available scientific evidence and consideration of potential side effects. And the board reiterates an invitation to the World Health Organization to evaluate the potential medical utility of cannabis and the extent to which the cannabis poses a danger to human life in light of the mandate of the board. And the WHO has now set up a committee under Rudy Charlton, who is from the Netherlands, to be able to look at the issue of cannabis. And so that will come under review soon. And to go back to my original document and say that there is another issue. The proponents of making cannabis available also bring up the issue that there are many cannabis users who are languishing in jails, and they say it's about vulnerable populations. And I want to point something out. Many countries have misinterpreted the UN drug conventions and have spent disproportionately more resources on supply reduction while neglecting the drug problem as a health issue. And this disproportionality has been the argument of legalization lobbies that use the ill-defined term war on drugs to vilify the violence and incarceration of vulnerable people. Now, one of the places that I visited is Venezuela. Now, Venezuela is the second highest homicide rate in the world. But Venezuela does not grow much drug. Its neighboring countries do. So the idea that drugs make people violent is really, I don't think it's a starter, but drugs may be dangerous in violent territories. That's an issue. So Venezuela has really created a structure where 1% of all profit from private companies go into a special fund, and they've created one of the best prevention programs I've seen in the world, to be able to get their children to become resilient to drug use. We have to be really practical. It's going to be very difficult to stop any drugs. What are we doing to protect our children? I'll touch on that as well. So in Article 36, recommends less severe sanctions and depenalization of drug use. That is currently legal. We can criminalize, but we do not have to penalize. And Article 38 recommends treatment, prevention, reintegration, and training of health professionals in the area of drug treatment. And this area has been neglected also, and it is one of the resolutions that we passed at CND this year, to be able to get countries to be able to set up agencies to be able to train medical doctors in the field of addiction science, which is not happening in our country. So patients with addiction are being treated by anyone, and I really mean anyone, because if you've got a house that you can't pay the bond in, the Department of Social Development is approached for a license, and they are licensing the buildings. They're licensing a program which you can download off the internet, but no one is checking the people who work in. And I want to make that point. Medical interventions per se can only be justified in the case of rare diseases that do not aggravate sufficient participants in random clinical trials to assess efficacy and safety. This, if necessary, may be the only justification of such a bill. With protective powers, example, multidisciplinary team decision-making and case recording. However, for the diseases, as I said, which have sufficient power participation, I don't think this falls under medical innovation. Since the aim of the bill is to create unimpeded access to marijuana cultivation, because that's what's mentioned in the bill, that people can cultivate themselves, production and use, in the absence of any evidence except anecdotal, it places the vulnerable patient and the caregiver at a disadvantage by protecting the medical professional, quacks and maverick. It also prevents law enforcers to differentiate between licit medical marijuana on the streets and illicit cheaper marijuana on the streets, thus facilitating illicit trafficking and the proceeds of organized crime. And I think that's the end game. Because if your policeman now knows that marijuana on the street may be legal, he's got no right to stop you. And it's happening at the moment where we know there are parallel imports coming to this country, there are people who are bringing in drugs into this country, well, not just in South Africa. Getting one invoice from Switzerland or the United States, send it to the drug inspector, but really selling cheap products under the guise of this one invoice. The bigger problem that we're going to start seeing is the concept of non-communicable diseases, which is a General Assembly issue, where a big amount of attention has been placed on diabetes hypertension. And one of the things that we are really concerned about now is counterfeit drugs. And this is the main contributor to hypertension and diabetes. Yes. So we really got major threats coming to our borders. In the United States, illicit medical marijuana schemes evolved into recreational cannabis legislation in some states, because it's all about softening the blow, leading to the provision of financial services now to cannabis retailers. Now, the federal government, which does not agree to the cannabis schemes, have been forced to issue directives to the banks to allow cannabis retailers to open bank accounts. And that is the whole move. So I think we must move out of our naivety. The lobby for the cannabis legalization availability is very strong. It is greater than all our whole budget that is looking after substance abuse. When I was in social development hearing, of you were there, my picture was on the screen, you know, as the bad guy. And really, I saw the presentation in three other countries. So it's not a South African presentation. This is a generic thing that's been sent throughout the world. It's almost hit one country in every continent. And this is Africa. And this is South Africa. And this is the most lucrative country. South America is Uruguay. The East is actually keeping very quiet, but they're against us. When I was speaking to the Japanese, they said, we're against us. I said, why don't you open your mouth and talk about it? Because you have 2016 UNGAS coming up, where everything is coming up for review. So I think it's very important that we protect the vulnerable, and that's really where I'm coming from. By far the greatest... Sorry. Here again, there's surely dilution of cheaper illicit marijuana in this state-sponsored scheme. So cannabis use is increasing in the United States. By far the greatest impact will be to public safety, example, drug driving and lower harm perception in youth. My patients tell me, Doc, you mean medical marijuana, this thing is good, can I have that one? I said, what you mean? It's marijuana. He said, you mean the one I'm taking is good? So we have a young population, unfortunately, which cannot be compared to the young population of the United States and Europe. The interpretation of what we're doing and our communication to the young people and our South African company is very poor. There is more communication showing that cannabis is good than any communication left to one or two NGOs to be able to pass the message using the least qualified staff to pass the message.
And I think this is really an indictment of how we're looking after our young people. We're really letting them down. Because if you want to measure the wealth of a country, you must measure the young person. The part of the greatest impact will be to public safety, drug driving, low harm perception. Youth have decreased brain function compromise with reduction in IQ scores. Now, IQ is not just about intellect. It's a combination of intellect, memory, and cognition. This is a spec scab. This is an 18-year-old. 3-year history of 4 times a week cannabis use. Now, a spec scan is a single photon emission computerized tomograph. It measures brain activity. It does not measure brain structure. You know, CAT scans and MRIs will tell you brain structure. When someone comes to me and they say my MRI is normal, I said, that's great, so why are you acting silly? Because your behavior comes from the brain. If the structure is normal, I'm not interested. I'm a rehab man. I want to know how your brain's functioning. So that is the underside of the brain. Now those two areas on top, those gaps, it doesn't mean there's no brain there. It means it's hypofunctioning. It's less than 55% functioning. And those two areas on top control what I would call common sense. And common sense is the prefrontal cortex. It controls a few things. One, motivation. So that way you hear motivation is not coming from. Two, cognition, the process of information. Three is personality, how you talk, how you walk. Four is judgment. Now, judgment is very important. So we talk about gateway drug. What is gateway drug? Well, there's two areas. One is you cause the hypofunctioning of the brain, and the person can stop one drug, but he'll need another drug to take over the functioning. So we talk about chemical dependency. People talk about alcohol, cannabis, heroin, and cocaine. But really, the brain is dependent on the chemical dopamine. Alcohol causes the release of dopamine, which makes this function. So the brain is dopamine dependent, which would mean why today in the addiction field, we don't talk chemical dependency anymore. We don't talk alcoholism anymore. We talk addiction. Because it explains that ball is rolling down the roulette table when it's just falling on 14 red and you got money. That little grip of dopamine is what gets you addicted. And we know that a lot of gamblers are compulsive and go and get addicted to gambling. They don't want the money. Their intellect says they want their money, but when they get their money, they wish their money. Very few of them use it properly, because the dopamine peaks in patients with addiction causes temporary paralysis of the common sense of the brain. Which means you'll see patients with addiction are usually very good. They're good businessmen, they're good at this, they're good at the academics, they're masters at a lot of things. They even run countries. But what happens? What happens? It's a very simple thing. Addiction is a temporary loss of common sense. So the intellect is there, and the intellect is preserved. And that's why when you speak to patients who are taking cannabis, they have very good intellectual arguments that you may even start believing it. You will actually go with the flow. And then eventually when you're at home, you realize, the basic starting point was flawed. I'll just show you another. This is a 28-year-old. Now, why I brought this up? Because most people have the idea that it's only young people affected. The problem is, it affects different people. A 57-year-old physician was still practicing. Prof? He's still practicing. Because you only need a few things. If you're 57 years old, 3 years older than me, and if you're practicing for 30 odd years, you don't really need much intellect. You just need to repetitively do this thing. For example, what we've seen in the education department, teachers, when you start changing your education curriculum, your teachers can't learn new things, they go for boarding. It's costing a lot of money. We need to start repairing the brain. And that is what 21st century addiction rehabilitation is, brain repair. Not counseling. Counseling is done in the church. Rehabilitation centers are supposed to repair the brain. And there's a big difference between therapy and counseling. So this is a person who stopped cannabis use. So stopping cannabis use doesn't mean the brain repairs on its own. And what a lot of people do, they cross-addict. They cross-addict. I had a lady come to me 2 years ago in the evening. She asked the most remarkable question. She said, Dr. Nigel, I heard you work with addiction. My husband has stopped drinking many years ago, but I want you to start him drinking again. And I said, why? She said, he's very handsome now, and he looked good. And I said, so? You should be happy. He said, no, Dr. Nigel. He's having affairs. When he drank, he sat in the house.
So I think it's important to understand the concept of cross addiction. Sex addiction is a major problem, which is linked to what one of our esteemed colleagues mentioned earlier, the issue of poor respect for women. Therefore, respect for women and children, we're going to have a problem. Addiction is really climbing. So, I showed you the slide. I'm not sure the pictures is much better. I mean, these are real live people. Okay. So, some industries are making a major investment in reducing the harm of other regulated products, like tobacco and alcohol. This is oblivious if regulated cannabis markets are established. Even if restricted youth have already increased usage as more drug becomes available. Prevention and treatment services are limited in South Africa. So, I think we have a very poor infrastructure when it comes to addiction or addiction response. So, adding to the load without being able to help people who are really fall prey is really, I think, irresponsible for us. But teams are recruited from other professions without understanding rehabilitation protocols, rather minimizing them as detoxification and counseling centers with detention. And this is leading to two important developments. One, the increase in psychiatric diagnosis of patients are placed in inappropriate treatment settings. And I think proper standards. There's no space in your psych hospitals because your addicts are sitting there and they should be sitting somewhere else, which does not promote development and reintegration, but rather stabilization. Secondly, another area, the area of harm reduction. In South Africa at the moment, there's a study showing 64,000 intravenous drug users. And one of the reasons for that is we do not even have medication for the big scourge that is around, which is heroin addiction, which is hunger and sugars and that one. So everyone's moving to HIV production and needle and syringe exchange issues, but no one is really looking at the patient who's the addict. And if you look at the family histories of the patient's addiction, the problem is poor engagement by their fathers in childhood. Therefore, patients with primary addiction disorders stand at risk of not being provided with appropriate strategies to develop and recover as the number of addicts increase daily. Current medical practices allow for new products to be developed for illnesses without the need for an additional bill. If products from cannabis are to be used for medical purposes, it is difficult to justify in a smokable form with unreliable dosage of unreliable THC concentration and open the door to increased hybridization in an unsupervised setting. I was reading an article now. When you say that cannabis can be used for, let's say, for nausea and vomiting, if you have to say that, I put that as an indication. A judge in New Mexico actually overturned the ruling because the ruling was that the understanding was that you first try medication for nausea. When it doesn't work, then you go to the cannabis products. But the judge said, I'm sorry, I'm overriding that because in your package you said it's okay for nausea, so he doesn't need to try anything else. So I think our colleague actually mentioned that we're very careful in how we define these issues. So, so we have Sativex and Marinol available, etc. In conclusion, there's a worldwide synchronized and concerted effort to recruit unsuspecting people to influence and cause us the common man to create political pressure for cannabis legalization. The current draft is poorly formulated and confused, but rest assured the pressure for legalization will mount. So this is an opportune time to discuss. We must remember that we have to protect our vulnerable youth, and as with tobacco and cannabis, the big cannabis industry will not subsidize the health budget to deal with the complications and consequences of increased availability. The lay public needs more information about drugs and usage, not just the ineffective don't do drugs message. Young people are using drugs as a solution for improving mental well-being. Our honorable sir, if I have to give someone with that brain, which has hyperactivity, if I give him cannabis, it will make that brain work normal. When the cannabis wears out, those holes get bigger. Next time he needs a higher dose. That's how addiction works. So cannabis in a person who's got ADHD, for example, and if you give him cannabis, he concentrates. But he'll forget next week what he learned last week. Mm-hmm. And memory is a big issue. And we must worry about the biggest curse that's coming from mental health, which is not major depression and bipolar, but the issue of dementia. I mean, dementia is going to cause a major stress on in our life. Past sentence. With regard to cannabis, research to support medical application are inseparable tools. So, I support medical research, so I'm quite in agreement with Professor Talley on this issue, and
I'm available for any comments, any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Naidu. We will then ask questions from members. I will understand that this is the first time to come in front of the portfolio committee. There are protocols say that you have to learn protocols of parliament, that you speak to the chair. So a little bit of aid.
Quite an interesting
subject and question. Mindful of time.
I can ask about those goals. Now, I think the best or the most important battle is to make sure that there are no holes in anybody's brain. And that is a task and a half to make sure that people don't have these holes, because if you keep on sealing them and then they become bigger instead of becoming smaller, then it's a serious problem. So it goes without saying that for the love of our country and our children, we should really do something about it and not what we did with AIDS, which became a bigger problem. So this one we must prevent from happening. If it's happening, we must try to squash it before it becomes a real, real problem. And maybe this is just a beginning. Because after this, they'll be having cocaine, they'll be having heroin, they'll be having all sorts of things. But this other one would now change. You wouldn't give them a high. The hole would become bigger and bigger, close it with a bigger shot. I'm scared to think about that we couldn't even do something that is doable. Now, if we have a bigger one and we create ourselves, maybe through benign neglect, or maybe through some slay of the hand type of thing where people come, beware of the Greek who come bearing present, then we are creating a bigger problem for the nation. And I 100% support what you're saying, that let's be aware of the soldier horses and not allow them even there, because they were made through war and they were meant to win the war for the enemy. So we should not accept that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I want to welcome the report, Chair. It was very informative. And it has answered most of the questions that I had as an individual. Because I had my own suspicions, but I couldn't talk about them. Because, sometimes when there are things that are presented before you, as a member of parliament, you become suspicious. But from my health experience, I was wondering exactly what this bill is entailing and what it is that it's trying to address exactly. Whether I'm legalizing marijuana or we want to open the door for other people to go and sell dacha legally or whatever. I have many things. Whether somebody somewhere is the one who wrote this thing and presented, and we said to use maybe the late member or whatever. I have my questions, but I think with your presentation, my suspicions and my I'm answered. Thanks.
Honorable James.
Could you deal with a slippery slope proposition? Is there an example in the world, or examples in the world, where medical marijuana is appropriately regulated and legal for use, and where that's spilled over into the general population and the general use? Is there such an example? I mean, what's the empirical evidence around the slippery slope claim that you're making?
Thank you. We did look at it in two directions. The initial direction was California, where medical marijuana facilities or dispensaries were created many years ago. And no doctor was prepared to put his signature on a prescription for it. So they
they altered the initial statutes and said if a doctor would recommend it. So the doctor would recommend without any recent issue, and that would be because the litigation is protecting itself. And they would go to these marijuana dispensaries, which were like Starbucks. There were so many of them. Okay. And they didn't really medical marijuana legal schemes, but they were running as medical marijuana issues. And that's moved from there now right to medical marijuana and moving to recreation. So that's one direction of it. Then if you look at other countries, for example, in the UK you have manufacture of this thing. There is no spillover on this issue. But you have your structures in place properly. And if you don't call it medical marijuana, for example, when we use methadone for patients or pepidine, we don't call it medical opium. See, so this, we must create a disconnect in people's minds. They mustn't be thinking that marijuana is this, because this, what really the agenda is, a lot of people are pushing for, is to smoke the herb. You know, some people with good intention are having the extracts, and the abuse potential there is very low. So that's why I said there are a lot of well-meaning people who are taken into good arguments, who are agreeable, but they have been used in the wrong measure. And that's why South Africa has to go that way. We need to be very clinical, scientific about it, structured, well done, and we need to be able to get to the position where we say, this is dronabinol. This is not medical marijuana. Because our people on the street and people, the common men, don't understand it. So therefore, it's totally legal to be able to go there. And it's well structured. There's no spillage. There shouldn't be a spillage. You know? Because if you look at the THC, like, look at Sativex. It's got a combination of THC and it's got dronabinol, I think it's right. And then they alter the combination. See, if you have more THC, it becomes a little bit high, less THC. So you have these different concoctions. And I think this is what MRC can look at, working on those issues and find a new extract. I think there's much more that you can find that's come out. NIDA, which is actually from the US, has sponsored the Israeli. I think one of the studies is an Israeli has done a lot of work on this issue. But in Israel, they are selling the herb. Now, what has happened over the years, THC content is rising. So it's a massive industry. At the moment, people in South Africa are already selling the dispensers and vaporizers. Thank you.
Just a very quick question. I wonder whether the good doctor at some stage can say, let's ban cough syrups in South Africa because it's addictive. Let's ban benzene because people smoke benzene. Let's ban petrol because young people, and glue because they sniff glue and do all sorts of things. We see that. But also, I wouldn't like us to leave this meeting with a misconception that the prime mover of this bill, who is the Honorable Dr. Ambrosini, was under any influence by anybody when he put this bill on table. He had a personal circumstance, he suffered from cancer, we know what he went through, and it's because of his own research that gave rise to the bill. Whether we agree with the contents of this bill and amend it or whatever is another matter for the committee to deal with, but I would like that misconception to be cleared here and now. Thank you.
James,
just a quick question. Can you tell me who would have an interest, commercial interest, which sees the pharmaceutical companies that see this as an opportunity to make a lot of money? It's not a bad question, because often those would be precisely companies which fund the research, which is very expensive and government can't fund it alone. So there's a private public partnership in terms of research and funding it.
So,
I think that's not what we are here for. It's a point of order. You can ask the frog to name people and that they did this, and he explained what the data are. It's for us to tackle with those things. I think it's not fair. Thank you.
I would expect you to respond to that question, yes. But also, other from Honorable Singh, I understood it was more of a comment trying to clarify a particular view that he has picked up. So, I don't know. I think we are done with responses. Is there something that you want to say?
Thank you, Madam. There's just one thing I wanted to clarify. I think earlier one of our colleagues on the MRC mentioned that opiates for pain is addictive. That is not true. Opiates are not addictive when used in authentic pain. when you're using opiates in non-orthotic pain, it's addictive. And I think that's very important because in South Africa we have a big problem of opium, I mean of narcotic tablets overdose. In the United States it's a big problem. So controlling medication is very important. Thank you.
I think we have been discussing a very important subject. And in listening to all presentations, I'm happy that we have been joined by two psychiatrists. Mental health has always been my passion. My passion because I go think that as a country, not before 1994, but before and after. In fact, before, mental ill patients were treated as they were locked up somewhere. If you're mentally ill, you'd look at someone. There was never a program that was put in place to understand what is it. And also assist communities in picking up, even families for that matter, in picking up that, well, my child may be bipolar. My child may be. And that, I want every one of us in this room to understand. People always think that we always like to always refer to the past. Our past is teaching us how to move forward and what are the things that we are. And health, mental health in particular, is one of the sectors in terms of the disease that when people were diagnosed, there was always a stigma attached. Secondly, and I always say, Prof, even if a psychiatrist, if you are trained, even if it's you are paid $1 million a month, I will never, because we were told that all of us here in this room, there's a thin line between sanity and insanity. It's very thin. Psychiatrists will maybe differ. And I always say, I wouldn't like to work in a psychiatric institution because I will end up being gay. All of them. You have raised an important matter that on how we behave, and it's some of the issues that they have been taken for granted by everybody. But in your presentation, there is something very profound. A sentence in the last page, delay public needs more information about drugs and usage, not just the ineffective don't do drugs message. And in all psychiatric institutions, you'll see don't do drugs, you'll only see a poster. I think this sentence, in my view, is trying to then, is beginning to say all of us must come up with a program on how best to empower our communities. And the Department of Health, maybe, not only the Department of Health, let's not start there. Us, as legislative arm of the state, has got that responsibility. As I was listening to everybody, I then begin to say, all of us are victims in one way or another. All of us are victims in one way or another. And how best we ensure and encourage people to speak up. If we say a woman who is abused must talk, it then means drug users and addicts, they must talk. But in them talking, we must come up and assist them. Our youth, right across are victims of it. And when the victims, they become vulnerable. And nobody in this room can say, my child will never be subjected or will never be a victim of. So it's quite a huge and comprehensive subject. It doesn't only need health, it doesn't only need social development, it doesn't only need law enforcement. but it needs the entire community, irrespective of class and race, and gender for that matter. So, as we were engaging with subject, I thought that it's important that I start there because it's quite a very powerful subject. And rest assured, some of us in this committee were going to ensure that we go all out with our communities. We do witness in our communities, Dr. Naidu, we do witness the behavior patterns of young people and older people who are using drugs. When we were still students, we were told that any person who smokes dacha, why they kill a lot, is because they see when they look at you, you are like a small, you are small up to a side of an ant, and they want to grab. And when you look into their behavior, you realize that, oh, okay. And it can't be that people who are using, in particular, dacha, they are not aged. They are a danger to society and to themselves and to everybody. The other part that is very important, that initially when we listened to the presentation, all of us agreed that more research is to be done. And again, today, as I was listening, it also touches into that. But it must be a research that is going to be taking us forward. It must be a research that is going to empower us. It must be a research that is going to be speaking to do's and don'ts. It must be a research that is going to make everybody understand why it is important for that research to be done. And I agree with Honorable Singh, whatever. It's not about now we are saying yeah or no for them. Now we are empowering ourselves so that when we come to that point, we know when we say it's not desirable and why we say it's not desirable. If it is, why we say it is. So everybody in this room must have that understanding. The last part in my view, which is more, I always say without any fear of contradiction, health has got its own ideological views and connotations. I always become worried, maybe because of democracy. I always become worried when we are more told about studies of America, Canada, and whatever. We are never told about stories in Africa. And I'm challenging researchers. Do research and studies in Africa. We are Africans. We are the victims as Africans. Not talking about South Africa. I'm talking about Africa as a whole. And therefore, the research, when you come back, I'm challenging. Give us the studies, compare, because we must have that comparison of the West and Africa. I think that is very important. Because it is an African child. Not that our children are not being, it is an African child that then becomes a victim. My niece was very hyper. She is staying in California, and she came and visited us here when the grandfather passed on. But I observed something very strange, and it's what as health workers we always say though. And people that are smoking dacha have got a high appetite of that you can never believe in. They eat every time. And what I observe is every time he has gone to take a puff, about an hour or so, she wants food. She's on everybody there. But that's why I'm saying we're all victims. But for us to ensure, and I will labor on this point, it is not about, we must ensure that our debate is simplified, our research is simplified for that ordinary parent who is in the deep rural area, whose children are victims of this in urban areas, in peri-urban areas, whether you are rich, whether you are poor. And fortunately, we understand English, but for them, why I'm saying research must be simplified, is for them to understand. And thank you, honorable members. We have taken much of the time for a good cause. We are going to come back with the research council. You have got the responsibility. Dr. Naito, you have got the responsibility of simplifying. Now you must tell us, when you come back, you identified a child in Khayelitsha, and this is what you have picked up. You must come back, tell us that you have identified a child in the two rural areas in Boom, in Venda, in Limpopo, in KZN, so that we are able, when we go out, we are able to understand. When we are going to have a mental day in Parliament, it is not going to be about a mental day, don't do that. It must be a mental day of a different approach, content, and so as a committee working together with the department, we'll try and see that in our next meeting also we really come up and have a day that wants to have some a big day where everybody is able to see. Even if we put a stall here, stalls must not only be about trade and industry, about Department of Health, Dr. Pillay, must come and say, in a particular day, we are going to have a exhibition about health and about good health, because we never separate what we are discussing here in terms of on what is the impact of that, in terms of mental health and mental sickness. I want to, it was unfortunately they know in the committee when we talk about mental health, I know that we're not here about mental health, but whether we like it or not, this subject also touches that. The last presentation also touched into that. But what is important, what is key, is the research, and we'll be awaiting for that research. Give us that research, give us on time so that when we go through it, we are able, not that we are going to do our own research for your own information. We will do our own research, but we want to balance that with your research, which is to be more reader-friendly, more accessible for the benefit of the 70% or 80% of the poor, unemployed, underemployed people of South Africa who think that is the. And it's not because of their own liking, it's because of the system. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. This session, I will, as our guests are leaving, members of the committee must remain so that we can discuss our few things of the committee that we're going to do. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm leaving. Those are the simple things. It's not about being a doctor or whatever, but it's about being a public representative, a mother, a sister, a father, a brother, a wife. That is a victim of drugs. Thank you very much. We've got only one set of minutes. I hope all of us have got there. 20th of March. We have all copies of the 20th of March. First page. Is there something that I'm missing? Oh, okay. First page, honorable members. Second page. Third page. The last page. I don't know. It's not a question. It's only that it is. It has also, it has everything there. Concerns raised by the committee. Maybe it's what you said, that implement that in every sentence you say the committee raised concerns when the topic is about concerns raised. I don't know. I just wanted to raise that so that it's more, but it's not a hard and fast, maybe it's just being fast. Honorable, my salary and honorable James, and which page? Oh, honorable Mason. The only thing is that you are not speaking through the mic.
Dr. Marcella, let it be moved so that the meaning of the changes made in 2015 as a true reflection of what transpired on that day with the corrections that have been made.
James?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the item 3, concerns raised by the committee on page 4, I don't like that second bullet point. I don't recall that is quite what settlement was. It says the committee was concerned that the PSA only reported about the poor emergency medical services in North West while there were poor services in all provinces. Now, if that is what we said, then this is accurate reflection. But I don't recall that is what we said. And what would make it better, because it's a general blanket statement that is poor in all provinces. There might be pockets of areas. What would be better is to say, whilst there were problems in all provinces. Because poor says it's just all blanket bad. So my recommendation would be to say that there are problems in all provinces. It's true. Of different magnitudes, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
And if that was acceptable to the mover, then I would second the minute.
But it looks, your amendment is acceptable. Your amendment is acceptable. Thank you very much. Yes, members, then, Honorable Dabo, is it on?
Oh.
Okay. For that, can we, are there any objections? The minutes? Okay. No. Honorable Dabo?
Thank you. Chair, I'm worried about one thing. In the last meeting where we discussed this bill, after the meeting, I received a letter from Dr. Mansusu Buthelezi, if you remember. And today we're discussing this bill. and I'm worried again. You know, I need protection because it's like, you know, my right of participating on this bill, you know, it gets threatened. You know, I can't participate free. And if you have listened to Honorable Singh when he was responding to what I was saying in terms of what Dr. Naidu was presenting, he was answering it directly or indirectly. And I'm only saying that if today again I'm receiving another letter, how must I respond? Because, you know, as a member of this portfolio committee, I have a right to raise my views. And I don't think I must, somebody, somewhere, must intimidate me by giving me letters that the way I say what I'm raising in the portfolio committee, it's like I'm affecting whatever they want to achieve. And in fact, because I got it from Obama Osutu, and then they wrote me that letter as a member of this portfolio committee. And even now, you know, I'm worried. And it's protection, yeah.
No, Honorable Ndaba, I think you are correct by saying, by you did receive that letter. Let me take the responsibility and the blame of not then making a follow-up. What then I will do, I will then make follow-up with the offices that deals with the situation so that you are then able to participate and feel free in participating. You are correct by saying everybody's got a right to raise issues. And then you receive a letter from a particular leader of a particular organization which has raised a particular matter, you really ought, natural human nature, to feel intimidated and feel uncomfortable about that. But I'm committing myself in making a follow-up and protecting on that. Honorable James?
On that matter, it is a matter of principle. I mean, it's odd to have a leader of a political party write a letter to a member of the committee. Where they are all parties. So I would say it strikes me as really odd, so I would welcome a follow-up on that on a matter of principle.
Thank you, Honourable Members. We have come to the end of our most... come again? Oh, no, that was a nice closing. Yes. No, thank you very much for giving us a chance. No, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. It's off record.
This one of the apps, okay, Fenyak. Oh, yeah, come back. Oh, yeah, come
on.
What's the name?